The At Your Instep podcast is brought to you in part by Empire Cards. Check them out at www.empirecards.com.
Hello, and welcome to At Your Instep. My name is Morgan, and I'm joined by Mike.
Hello.
And Jordan.
Hello.
We also have Dave over here.
Good to be back.
We got the whole crew. Dave, how was your vacation?
It was nice.
I don't care. So obviously we have a rather large episode. We missed you guys last week, but you know, standard is sort of winding down, and we can only talk about Mono Black so much before making a lot of dick jokes or something like
hey,
that.
Hey, it only
know.
Almost won the
before
week.
We make dick jokes well played.
So yeah, we obviously are back, and we have the full spoiler here. So there's lots of cards that we want to talk about. So we figured we are actually just going to dive into it and not talk your ears off.
So we're going to call this what? The Journey into Dicks.
Extravaganza.
For 12 hours.
Not 12 hours. God, no.
If you look down at your timer and it's 12 hours, just close it now. There's nothing good that can come of this.
Yeah, nothing good at all. So we'll break it down through basically all the irrelevant card types. We're going to break it down by color and type if there is no color, obviously. So like land and artifact. And then we're actually going to have... I know I get ragged on for breaking down things simply, but every podcast does it. It's not like...
And if I was
you know,
on their podcast,
there's a lot of enchantments in this
too,
set.
I don't know.
Anyway, moving on.
Smart
and then
lands.
We're going to go to a going-to-turn segment that's going to be moderated by Jordan. So me, yep. Mike, and Dave are actually going to be pitted against each other, and we'll see who wins. And we're actually going to be talking about some controversial cards. So if there's a card that we're going through the card-by-card look at for Constructed and you don't see it, it might be in going-to-turns. So let's go ahead, and we'll after that, and then we'll go into the outro, but let's go ahead and take a look at the first spoilers that we want to take a look at first is lands.
These are colorless, by the way, in case you were confused.
There's only three of them.
Well, they
so
add colors.
So
right. It's an important distinction.
To the mana pool.
You know,
you don't add a tree.
Really,
you don't tap it and go get a forest out of your deck.
Really track,
you,
I know you do, and we try to piss you off. So victory for everybody.
I had a watch that tried really hard, but it was still busted.
How can watches try? They work or they don't.
They have a moral compass.
No.
So
that's
mana
a compass.
Confluence. We have a reprint here. We have a fixed sort of City of Brass.
Yeah.
Original City of Brass, and I watched this happen at FNM before, where an opponent had an Icy Manipulator and was just tapping their opponent's City of Brass.
Oh, my.
And died. City of Brass originally just said whatever gets tapped is when you take the damage.
Right.
So this is a pay one life, add one mana of any color.
Yeah.
So you are able to not die to Rishid and Port and Legacy. And it's also interesting where you can't use this if you were like at negative totals or anything.
Yeah, so like an ad nauseum in modern, like you can't use it, which is kind of awkward. So
this also isn't a trigger, so like you can't tap it for mana and then bolt your opponent to win. So it's not like strictly better.
No, you have to pay the life.
Right. Whereas with City of Brass,
you could respond to the trigger.
Right. But for all of that, you get a pretty sweet. I mean, add one mana of any color to the mana pool. The thing I've seen most people on Twitter talking about this is how surprising this land was. Like, it seemed like Wizards like really wanted to make sure that mana was a little tougher, and then all of a sudden they're like at the end of this block, like, oh, by the way, have fun, guys. Here you go.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost a given, because think about if this land didn't exist, I still think the format would be really stale, even with all the... I mean, there are a lot of good cards. So, like something that you obviously will see by the end of this is that we're all really excited about the set. There are a lot of good things that happen with the cards.
Compared to Born of the Gods, like, this set is just,
backflips.
Like...
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say this card's going to be the most impactful card in the set. I'm going to follow up my Temple of Enlightenment.
Dave's cold shot of land being the
best
card in the
set. Confluence.
He won last set.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. But, I mean, obviously this is really good for aggro decks because it makes
it lets so many of the aggro decks back in the format. And what's nice is this bridge between the Ravnica block, Return to Ravnica block, like a lot of cards that just haven't been seeing play. Because they're just hard to cast. This is all of a sudden like gives you a chance to shine again. I've seen some lists just running a couple of these that are going back to like Prime Speaker style Bant and cards that are just really tough to cast right now. They're like, you know what? Yeah, again, go play, have a good time.
Right, and you have things like in green decks, you have things like Corsair Crucifix, which helps mitigate this damage a lot as well, which is pretty interesting. So obviously, this is going to be a hit, a very important card of the set.
I think you're going to see it show up mostly in aggro decks.
Oh, yeah, most certainly. You're not going to play this in like your control decks. Mid-range decks might touch it a little bit, like as a one of to three of. But, you're going to see your aggro lists play this primarily.
Yeah, I think the deck that... Oh, I guess the already existing deck that picks up the most is green white aggro.
Right.
That deck was already already I'd say tier 1.5 right now.
Yeah.
Or I guess before mana confluence, and this just smooths out the mana that much more.
Yeah, I mean they have a lot of like double color, you know, costing requirements.
The awkward wanting, like the deck that wants to run Brimaz and Boonsatter probably
loves
this.
Yeah, I mean they have green and white one drops.
Yeah, that's super.
So
awkward.
I mean, you want to be able to hit those,
and even like three color aggro decks get a lot from this as well. So
humans,
things like Naya,
Humans gains a lot. Naya also gains a lot.
Right,
this land is going to be very important for bridging things.
It is.
Also, will make Burning Earth
even better.
Card at the end
even
of
better. Oh man,
you'll take two off of your temple there.
Nice mana base, idiot.
And then we have our two new temples. So we have the green black temple and Temple of Malady, and the red. Blue temple.
I love the red blue.
It's not Temple of Milady.
It's not Temple of Milady.
It's not a Redditor. A Redditor did not design the card.
And then we have Temple of Epiphany, which is the blue red temple.
I think that art is beautiful. I don't know. It is
very. But. I mean, most of the blue red land art is pretty nice. On all
at least this one doesn't look like a steam vents. That's like all the other ones.
I guess that's kind of true.
True.
I mean,
or Scalding Tarn.
I don't know. It's something like that.
So moving on to the other colorless thing.
No. I mean, obviously, the temples are going to be good. They're going to be played. They might even be played in things like Modern, which we've seen some temples break into, especially like the blue red temple. Things like Splinter Twin. You know, their mana base is bad. Trying to play Kiki-Jiki and Crypto Command. So
the blue red one's probably the one that has the highest chance of making it into Modern.
Right.
Like I even think like Storm may want a couple of these because like that filter like turn one like if you don't have looting or something like. It's pretty powerful.
I think I've heard like people compare it to like a free opt even a lot of the times because a free sky is very powerful, especially in decks where you're trying to find pieces to combo off. So definitely, you know, take a look at the blue red temple.
I guess
as
like,
being something that'll might not be standard impacting as much, probably, but maybe not as much, but definitely moderate impacting someone.
I don't know. I guess like with zero testing, I don't like the idea of that because if that's in your opening hand with the Serum Visions, you just feel really terrible.
Yeah, but like so. For every hand you have like that, what if you have a hand that's just like has all these pieces and like now your land is essentially your eight, like your Jataxian Probe. Like it lets you just see that card. It gets you that much closer to going off. Like I'm not saying they want all four, but I'm saying
no, sure. I mean, like I said, zero testing in a book.
I mean, Splinter Twin has played some copies of Desolate Lighthouse for, you know, since that card's been out, and that card's super slow. But the ability to see extra cards is just, it's super important.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Storm maybe not, I guess, but, like, I would think that Storm...
I mean, it's not bad on turn one, but, like, any other time past turn one, it's just miserable, right? Especially, like, in a format like Modern. Like...
I think it'll be played.
I think we have to test it and we'll have to see.
I
think the green-black temple is going to be pretty important for Standard.
Oh, for sure.
I think if you had to rank all of them, this would probably be... second or third.
Yeah, a lot
on
of people
list.
Have been aching for it just because they want to play their Abrupt Decays.
Yeah, I mean, you might see the old mono black splash green devotion pop back up again because, you know, that list didn't have the temples to go along
and
with the other versions.
I think that's one of the big mid-range control lists that you might see week one is people just being like, I'm going to slap this temple into my mono black deck and I'm going to slap in some Abrupt Decays and we'll see what happens. So
Golgari Charm looks awfully good.
Oh yeah, Golgari Charm too against first week is primarily aggro decks because they're the easiest to kind of put together. So especially with
like Elspeth, and then you know.
Oh yeah, well think about things like the mono black list, the mono black aggro list, which is fairly cheap to put together if you have Mutavaults already, and a lot of their turn one creatures are X1s. They're 2/1s, but they're going to get wiped out by things like Golgari Charm. So I think that's might be a prominent week one list that shows up. Let's move on to white.
We're not going to talk about artifacts?
We're gonna catch us last.
We're going to come back around.
Whatever.
Go all the way around.
Lands are easy because there's only three of them.
There's only one playable artifact.
There's five artifacts. I don't tell you, man.
One playable.
Whatever.
We're going to white.
Anyway, let's go to white. So
he doesn't like white.
So
it's
let's
best
go
color
ahead.
Wheel, right?
Why was that funny?
We'll start off with Aegis. I'm just gonna keep on going. We'll start
power
off with
through it.
We'll start off with Aegis of the Gods. He is a 1/1 for a 2/1 creature, enchantment creature, human soldier, and he gives you hexproof. You have hexproof when you control this creature. So, this is effects that we've seen on things, just like enchantments. Ivory Mask, I think, is a popular one. That's like a time shifted, not time shifted, but
There's a true, was a true believer.
True believer is probably true the believers. Closest yeah. To this card.
Also, what was it? Witch Orb.
Which Bane Orb.
Which Bane Orb. Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
So, what do you guys think about this card?
I don't think it's constructed playable, personally.
Yeah.
No, I mean, if anywhere, it would be in Modern, because it's a Storm Hate Bear. But the problem with it is it's a 2-1, and they usually have, you know, bolts for that.
I think
right. Well, it's Grape Shot, right?
In Grape Shot,
I think
yeah.
It's actually Legacy playable, because Legacy Storm decks, like, oops all spells and, like super, you know, super Storm and everything. They generally don't play removal in the main. Like, they're going to have to wish for removal to kill this. Because, like, you can't... Even if, like... And Grape Shot's awkward as well, because, like, you have to just... Again, I'm saying for Modern, but, like, Grape Shot, sure. You can't, like, place one trigger here and target you. Until that card's gone, I mean, you can't do anything with it. But I think Death and Taxes probably likes but this card.
Those decks could already play True Believer and or Aethersworn Canonist, though, if they wanted to. Which both accomplish the same thing as this card.
Aethersworn Canonist, I don't think... You know, against Storm. Thing. But Storm would just play zero removal at all. I mean, like, they still get to cast a spell, right? I mean, like, this, like, they can like, you know, circle jerk all they want, but they can't do anything until this card's gone. Yeah. They can't win. They can't Cabal okay. Therapy you. They can't do anything.
I just think as competition is other cards that I'm are sure better at what
we
it
said
does.
I said the same thing about, we all said the same thing about Spirit of the Labyrinth, and that hasn't seen it in there. But I feel like this effect is better than that one was. And the thing about True Believer as well is, you're playing a deck that has 8 colorless sources in Death and Taxes. You're playing 4 Wasteland, 4 Rishon Import most of the time. So this card definitely a lot easier to cast if you don't have your Aether Vial.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's got potential. Damn!
We didn't even mention Thalia, by the way. But yeah, it's okay. Yeah,
LNBD.
Well, you know, so we do, but you still get to, you know, do things.
Yeah, yeah. But, like I said, it has potential. Maybe not in Standard, obviously, but you know, other places where you know having Hexproof is a lot more important. Let's go ahead and we'll move on to Banishing Light. So Banishing Light, this might sound familiar. It's 2 and a white, and it reads, when Banishing Light enters the battlefield, exile target non-land permanent an opponent controls until Banishing Light leaves the battlefield. So this is Oblivion Ring with new fixed, formatting, yeah. Or fixed formatting, if you will. So you can't do tricky things like, with the trigger on the stack, exile it and permanently exile one of their, you know, permanents, because that's not fun. People don't understand that interaction, and it's very difficult for new players.
Mark Rosewater said that wasn't the intent of the card.
Right. We don't want you to permanently exile things with this card. So, right. But this is, it's just like a Banishing Priest, if you've played with that card
so
recently.
So does something like that never come up in testing of new cards then? Like O-Ring or Fiendslayer or Fiend Hunter?
Well, that's how those cards always were. Templated.
Right.
Like Faceless Butcher and...
Mesmeric Fiend.
Mesmeric Fiend.
So you were supposed to be able to do that.
Well, that wasn't the idea behind the design. Like, they recognized you could do it, but, like, I think, you know, in somewhere in there, but it wasn't like, oh, okay, you can do this. And then, so sometimes, like, the way Magic rules work, especially if you go back and look at templating, is, like, somebody has to, like, really start doing terrible things with it. Like, you know, LSV has to break Moto with Oblivion Ring, and then they're like, maybe this isn't how this should work.
Right.
And I also think effects like that, so, like, that Torment is, like, you know, is it pre-Moto, right? Or is it, like, right at the beginning of Moto's Inception?
No, it was out when Moto was out.
Okay. Like, some of those things, like, the way trying to temple them into Moto is confusing as well. Like, and that's where some of, like, the changes arise. But, like, this just makes more sense. Like, this is supposed to be, you know, like, Oblivion Ring, like, a lot of effects like it, is supposed to be, like, a prison effect, right? Like, you're in jail, right? We can break you out of jail, right? You're not supposed to be exiled into the nether realm of the jail. Like, oh, black hole put up in the wall, swallowed you up. Jail gone. I don't know what to tell you, man.
I don't know where you go now.
This card also has really sweet art, too.
Yeah, it does.
Oh, yeah.
The foil's going to look so...
It's very nice. It's very nice. It'll definitely be played. I mean, everyone's going to want this.
I think it's important for the format, because
I think so, too.
It gives this effect back to something that isn't just blue-white, because the Tension Sphere has been so ubiquitous. And this also gives you a way to deal with the Tension Sphere.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you can actually just, like, exile the Tension Sphere with it, and it's... I don't know, it's... That's important. I mean,
yeah,
there's going to be a lot of
enchantment
removal running around. It's not going to be as good as
Oblivion Ring
in the past, but the card's going to be important.
Yeah, this gives decks like, I don't know, Big Tears Boros some options in the sideboard.
It does.
I also think that it gives something like Naya a lot of legs as well. So, you know, we've seen like a lot of Jund monsters and things
Centipede
like that.
Centipede Naya?
Yeah. So having access to a card like this, which is kind of like a catch-all, even though, you know, enchantment hate is really high, but it's really nice to just be like, well, I'm going to play this color that has access to something that can really handle a lot of, you know, any non-land permanent. So But yeah, definitely going to be played. Definitely pick up your copies if you can from the pre-release if you're going and things like that.
For sure.
So let's move on. Now, Mike, you said you want to talk about Dictated Heliod.
Yeah, I mean, only briefly. Like, I feel like Dictated Heliod is a pretty interesting card because it's creatures get +2/+2. Now, other people have said like it's in a format with Collective Blessing, which yes, it is. But Collective Blessing costs 6 and also costs two colors worth of mana.
Yeah, two different colors.
It's a big deal. But having this with Flash, like. I mean, I played Tempered Steel for a long time, and like that card would just like turn board states of laughable creatures into oh, you're dead. And this having Flash can turn like this can make blocks so bad. And I don't know what deck may want this right now. Like there's you still have like Elspeth's making 3 tokens at a time. Like seems okay. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying it will see a ton of play, but definitely it's the kind of effect that like if the metagame gets really creature heavy, like this is the kind of card that can just come down and entirely turn. You know, just like oh, by the way, I win this combat. Like, either you're dead right. or your board's dead or... And I don't know. I feel like the effect is powerful enough and Flash in colors that aren't... Like, we don't see Flash in colors that aren't blue very often. We have this whole, like, line of dictates where you have some effects that just have never had Flash before.
Right.
So, like, I think, you know, just, like, looking at this card and saying, like, eh, it's bad. It's like, well, it does things that no other card, like, it's done yet. So, it'll be interesting to see, I think.
Yeah, 100%.
I could see board states where it would be good, but... we'll see. I think it'll be a sideboard card.
I think it'll be like a sideboard, or maybe like a spicy one-off kind of card where it's right. just like, when you draw this, like, it's pretty nuts, so, but you don't want to have more than one, like, right. white five drop that does
yeah, it's
not
expensive.
Affect the board
yeah, two white and three is expensive for something like an Anthem, so. And especially when we have something like Spear of Heliod already in the format.
Right.
So, but I you know, having Flash is huge. You know, you see people flash on anything and people look at it. But definitely something to point out, and it's good to know that it's there. Obviously Bob Unlimited. So if you guys,
yeah, that's
you guys open it, yeah, just play it. Let's go ahead and we'll take a quick look at Eidolon of Rhetoric. It's 2 and a white for a 1/4, and it's got Rule of Law staple to it. So it's each player can't cast more than one spell per turn or each turn. So the only thing I really want to note is that it's 4 toughness, so it survives a bolt. And it could be potted into, potted away. So, potentially we could see it coming in to Birthing Pod in Modern. So, what do you guys think about this card? Obviously, Standard doesn't really have their very many implications.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to see this in Standard at all. Mm-hmm. I think in Modern, it'll definitely see some play in Modern. In Pod, I don't know what other decks would play this over Rule of Law. Potentially could see Legacy play just because, those two formats are the formats where Storm lives. So,
oh, yeah,
obviously that's what it's best against.
Yeah, it's also, it might see play. There's a, and I keep going back to this deck, I guess, but there's a modern version of Death and Taxes that's playing, any deck that has access to Aether Vial and effects like this in the format are pretty interesting because, you can't Aether Vial in Rule of Law, but you can Aether Vial in Eidolon, which is interesting. So, like, oh, you cast this spell? Okay, cool. Well, let's go ahead and in response do this.
Right.
Nice spell. My turn.
It's also bolt-proof, yeah.
It is also bolt-proof.
Yeah,
like,
that's
like,
huge.
David mentioned before, like, it survives a lot of different types of removal, so...
Yeah. Yeah, definitely so an interesting uncommon to look at. And it's kind of interesting because throughout the entire set, there have been creatures that have... powerful enchantment effects staple to
old,
them.
Old, powerful, uncommon enchantment staple to them, pretty much.
Right, but it's funny because white gets 2, and no other color actually gets the double dip. So does anyone want to talk about Launch the Fleets?
I threw it up there because I feel like card's interesting. It turns all your creatures into mini Hero of Blade Holds. So whenever they attack, they put a 1/1 white soldier creature token on the battlefield. I mentioned this card mainly because the blue heroic creature we'll get to, the battlefield Thaumaturge, or however you. I'd have to look at the.
I have to view it,
but,
to sound
makes,
it out.
It makes everything that targets a creature cost 1 colorless less, and the Strive cost on Launch the Fleet is casually 1 colorless. So you can. Like, the dream, of course, is to have a bunch of heroic creatures that you trigger off of this, and then they all make 1/1s, and you're just like, ha-ha! Or you have, like, a Purphoros in play. I don't know. Sounds pretty sweet, too. I feel like this card is going to be played, just because, like, it does... it's an army in the can if you have... But you have to have a winning board state for it to
right. It is definitely kind of presents itself as a win more card.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Like, you have to already have a board presence, and it's like, okay, I'm going to commit more to the board right into your wrath. Yeah. I don't know.
It's definitely cute. It's very flavorful, and that's why it's kind of interesting.
My face is the one that launched it, by the way.
So I'm proud of you. Proud of you, son. Let's take a look at next fleece Ram. So
another.
I love this card.
This card is so pretty looking too. It's like,
yeah, most certainly.
The art on this, that's amazing.
It's an enchantment creature, sheep.
And hey, it's Therese Nielsen artwork. So I mean, come on, of course it's gonna be a home run.
Right.
She's a fantastic magic artist. But yeah, it's a simple card. It's a 0/5 for one and a white, but it's at the beginning of your upkeep, gain a life. This is going to be in control deck sideboards if they play white, 100%. This is like an anti aggro card through and through.
Ditch those pillar failed oxes. Yeah. Pick up the ram.
Well, somebody also mentioned that white aggro might be boarding this to win the red matchups because it doesn't have defender despite being 0/5. Right. So you can play it with battalion triggers. Like you're just like, oh, by the way, I'll attack with it because you can't do anything to it to make the 1/1 become a 3/3 or battlefield medic activation. Like, oh, okay.
Yeah, and I mean, you have things like Spear of Heliod in those white aggro decks. Like,
right,
it just becomes 1/6.
Buddy.
Yeah, deal with it. So,
how you ever kill this?
Yeah, I think it's a card that'll show up in possibly a lot of different places in Standard. So it's an interesting card that seems like kind of underrated. Like maybe people don't know what's kind of going on with it. And then, but
five
don't underestimate it.
5 toughness is kind of a sweet spot too. Can't be Mizzium Mortars.
You're gonna fade a conflagration, the son of a bitch.
This is the kind of thing where the red player is gonna sigh. Chain to the rocket and feel really, really bad.
Oh,
about
yeah,
it.
Most certainly. Yeah, but it is an enchantment creature.
The white has everything.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Has all the answers.
Yeah.
But it is an enchantment creature, so that's kind of nice. So, yeah, let's go ahead. Dave is pointing at Oppressive Rays very, very hard. He is like, Oppressive Rays. So, Oppressive Rays, 1 white enchant creature. Enchanted creature can't attack or block unless it's a controller pays 3. The interesting part is an activated abilities of enchanted creature costs 3 more to activate. Now, I agree that this is kind of an interesting effect because we don't have... I guess we have Arrest in the format, but Arrest is just too expensive to play. But so this is like a pseudo-cheaper... Well, it's cheaper Arrest.
I just wanted to point this one out. I think this is an easy card to overlook if you're just looking at the set. And definitely, I think, white aggressive decks, it provides a 1-mana removal spell. So if you're looking to end the game really quickly... This is essentially just, I don't want to say source the plowshares, but
I mean,
it is a 1-mana removal spell that they have to spend their whole turn or,
Just think about this interaction with Polychronos. They play at turn 3 Polychronos, you're just like Oppressive Rays. Like, you're not doing anything with a Polychronos for so long. You can't even Monstrous in any reasonable time frame. And it's just, it's a legendary creature, so they have to play their other one and kill it. So I mean, it's not as bad as it used to be, but I mean, they still have to invest into another card to kill their own card to actually be able to do anything about your board.
Right. So I think this is a card. I mean, it's might not see that much play, but it's something that is certainly, I think, playable.
It's definitely hard to get excited about white removal when you have things like Stormbreath Dragon and Blood Baron in the format. But I agree that this is definitely a card that a lot of people aren't really talking about. So we'll go ahead and we'll take a look here at Reprisal. Actually, this is a reprint. And if I miss any cards, guys, just make me back up a bit. Okay. But I think
let me back you up real quick.
Oh, okay, fine.
Oppressive Rays on a Pack Rat.
Okay. I like it.
I'll pay 6 mana to make another rat because the next one doesn't cost 6.
That's still hey, might be dead by the time you get there.
Yeah, it might be, but it's mono black, so it's just the best deck ever printed. So,
all right, let's move on.
All right, so let's go with Reprisal. Reprisal is a reprint. Mike, when was it originally printed?
Oh, do you remember? Alliances.
Oh yeah, Alliances. Man.
With 2 different arts.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Alliances was crazy.
I remember
that.
The 6th edition art that had the weird dragon on it. I was like, this is really odd looking.
Yeah. So it's a 1 and a white instant destroy target creature with power 4 or greater. It can't be regenerated. So. Guess what? There's a lot of things in this format that that have power 4 or greater. Turns out Polychronos, Arbor Colossus.
Obsidot.
Desecration Demon.
Yeah, Desecration Demon. The new 5/5 demon if it sees play.
Yeah.
Boon Satyr.
Yeah.
Advent of the Worm tokens.
It hits a lot of stuff, and it's cheap.
And it's very splashable.
Yes, although that casting cost.
I look at this and I even think, like, you know, there's the blue-white devotion deck, the mono-blue that, like, desperately has looked for some form of removal against, like, even, like, Desecration Demon or other things. And it's like, oh, look, I'm already splashing for these D-spheres. I could always throw a couple of these in. Why not?
Yeah, it doesn't really hurt me that much, so
I don't
cares?
Have to give you a 3-3 token. Get out.
So, again, this is just another versatile spell that, you know, adds, you know, white is definitely the powerhouse color of this set, I think, a lot of the time. So it's I think it's going to be splashed a lot more, especially with this coming out, because there's just so many powerful cards that you just want to touch into white. So we'll go ahead, though, and we'll move on to blue. Is there another card?
Do you read people read your notes? I swear to God.
I want to talk about Skybind for just a minute.
All right.
Skybind is a white enchantment, 2 white and 3 colorless. It has Constellation. Whenever Skybind or another enchantment enters the battlefield, you may exile target non-enchantment permanent, return that to the battlefield at the beginning at the owner's under its owner's control at the beginning of the next end step. So this card reads like another card that I love from the past, which is Astral Slide. Obviously a lot less powerful than Astral Slide because it was a lot easier to cycle things. But I've heard a lot of talk, maybe not so much Constructed, but Commander for this card, where there's a lot of things to... Are you... Really?
Is this Commander cast?
Wow, okay.
Hater's gonna hate.
The next time you think a card's good, I'm gonna flip your computer off the desk.
Oh, wow.
That's fine.
I was just talking about there was an interesting effect. Like these exile effects when you have a lot of enter the battlefield things are pretty interesting.
It is non-enchantment permanent, so you can even hit your Scrylands for value.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Oh, I was throwing out there. Jeez, I'm sorry. I'm following the rules set forth about how we're setting up the cards and like discussing them, and you guys aren't, so you guys can all die.
The thing is, if it was cheap, if it was 3 mana like Astral Slide, we'd be talking. But
I'm saying it's like Astral. I was saying it had the effect of similar to Astral Slide, but it's not nearly as easy to trigger or cast as Astral Slide. I don't think you'll see standard play or any sort of constructed play. I was just throwing it out there as a commander card. Am I allowed to throw out a commander card every now and then?
All right, we'll throw the commander players a bone.
Right. You're welcome, you commander players.
Which, if you're a commander player, you probably don't listen to these kind of podcasts because they're like not fun. Right?
Oh, I'm sorry. I mean, we've all played commander besides Dave. You know,
I played it once.
I mean, like, I own like
good
a deck.
Know. Again, hope you all die.
I'm sorry, Mike.
No, you're already dead to me.
It's all right. Actually, fun
Let's
fact.
Move on to blue.
Never mind.
Fun fact, Dave. Fun fact.
Fun fact. First game of Commander I ever played was with Aaron Forsythe's deck.
Is this Fun Fact
Forsythe's
cast?
Deck.
Is this Fun Fact cast?
Yeah, it is.
Is it Fun Fact cast?
Is this Mike Sounds Like a Big Dumb Idiot cast? Is it? Yeah, moving on. Anybody think Aerial Formation is playable? No. Okay, moving on.
Moving on.
Nice color idiot.
All right, well, obviously we already kind of touched on Battlefield Thaumaturge. Which I think is how you would say that.
Thaumaturge, I believe.
Thaumaturge.
Morgan sounds like an idiot.
More like
podcast.
Thaumaturge. All right,
No, I think this
tape Nolan, everybody.
I think this card kind of pushes some of the heroic. There's already a blue black heroic deck that kind of popped up a bit. This card has a home.
The puppet strings deck.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, magic.
Come on, there's so many things that actually interact with this card. We can't do this. I don't want to edit this out, so it's staying.
Stop stuttering.
I you know what?
You're going to harass me? Guess what happens?
Anyway.
No, but things like Flames of the Firebrand, you know.
Yeah, this is interesting because like so we've already seen the Goblin.
Electromancer.
Thank you. We saw standard play even last format. And this one is interesting because of the things that target multiple things. So Flames of the Firebrand targeting 2 creatures is just red.
Right.
And then you get into the even more interesting things like Glimpse of the Sun God, which is, you know, tap X target creatures for, you know, X. Oh, this casually costs 1 white.
1 white.
Or Aurelius Fury. Like, you can lose Aurelius Fury for 1 now, just like target your opponent and all their creatures. But yeah, you can't cast spells and tap all your guys. Now, granted, that would be 3 colors.
Right.
So, but I don't know. This card has a lot of interesting things. Not to mention the fact that you can, like, its her own heroic trigger is like hexproof.
Yeah.
So you can, like, if you have those kind of spells, you can just like sort of inadvertently trigger it just to make sure it's safe for the turn, which is kind of, it's cute. It's an interesting, it's a kind of card I like blue getting, where it's just like, this like doesn't seem like it's the most broken thing in the world, but it also screams like, do something with me.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I definitely think that it'll see a play. It has a home somewhere. So it's exciting to see. Yeah, it's a powerful effect. It feels powerful. Anytime your spells get cheaper, it feels powerful. So,
can I play Devil's Advocate?
Sure.
I don't think this card will see play.
I mean, that's.
I agree. It is very interesting and it has some text on it, but
define see play though. Like, do you think it will do well? Because it's going to
see play. No, I don't think it'll do well. No.
Okay. It's fine.
Yeah. People might try. I think Sam Black might try something crazy with this card.
I agree it may not do well, but I think the card is too unique and it feels too interesting for people, like, not to go to F&M and see at least 3 to 4 people, right. Like, here's my Thaumaturge deck. And they're going to be saying things like, Thaumaturge! And you're like, yeah. What?
And, like, it'll see play because
that'll be the day quit magic.
There's already a blue X Heroic deck that saw standard play that did reasonably well in a GP. So it's like, people are going to play it because, like, there's already a pseudo shell there for it. But we'll kind of move on. Some people are talking about this one-drop Merfolk, this Dracra Mystic.
Dacra Mystic?
Dacra Mystic?
Dacra.
Dacra. Like Chakra?
Yes.
Very interesting.
Are like, yours out of order?
Nah. No. So it's one to blue for a 1/1. Blue and tap it. Each...
No, it's blue for a 1/1.
Excuse me. Blue for a 1/1. Excuse me. And you pay a blue and tap
Get
it.
Him, Dave.
Each player reveals the top card of his or her library. You may put the revealed cards into their owner's graveyards. If you don't, each player draws a card. So this is kind of a filter, if you will.
This to me is an interesting card. I don't know if this will be a standard staple or anything like that, but I could definitely see Blue Devotion possibly playing this as a way to kind of filter or draw cards.
Yeah, most certainly.
It does cost mana to activate, so that's a little awkward, but it's only one, and it's a one drop, which...
I mean, it's definitely interesting with things like Corsair of Kruphix in the format, where you get free information, so you're like, I don't want you to draw that. I'd rather you not.
Right.
I think it's also going to be interesting in older formats, like in Legacy or Legacy and Modern, because especially in Legacy, like as a one drop Merfolk, it's already interesting. But the fact that you have so many copies of Brainstorm and Ponder in the format, where it's like, oh, what'd you put back on top with Brainstorm? So now you got to start playing this whole little mini game where it's like, you know, have you locked yourself, or if you've pondered and kept it, I'm going to see what you did. Like you have some ways to, like, people when they see this card will like It's a powerful effect because, like, I know if I'm sitting across from an opponent, I'm holding a Ponder or a Brainstorm, and that card's on the table, I'm going to play differently than I was before that card was on the table.
Yeah, definitely.
And that is enough to at least give it a second look. Not to mention it says draw a card off of one draw creature. Even though your opponent's going to draw a card too, I mean, that's also relevant, so.
Yeah, I mean, I think this card could be a bit innocuous. Like, I don't know. I feel like it's a lot of power for one mana.
Yeah,
I agree.
Getting a pseudo selection of what your opponent is going to draw, and it changes like the dynamic of like scries and things like that in the format. Like, oh, I need this, but he has that, so I can't keep it on top. So what do you do? Like, you just feel like it just kind of changes that situation so much.
Right.
So it's definitely unassuming, but you know, could be fairly powerful, in certain formats, and especially things like mono blue.
Yeah, I could see Mono Blue playing a couple.
Yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah, most certainly. So let's go ahead and did we put Hubris on here? I just really enjoy that there is a card called Hubris that exists in Magic now. It's just like an unsummon that has the all auras clause, which is kind of interesting. But...
So when Michael Jacobs casts this on his own creature, he can say our Hubris betrayed us, and that'd be crazy.
Correct.
Yeah.
It'll be amazing. But yeah, no, I just wanted to comment on
it. Not funny, Mike, shaking your head.
Michael Jacob, I don't care.
It's all right. Let's
You're
take
sad
a look.
He called your deck trash.
He calls
every deck garbage.
One of the guys we're friends with who he did pretty well at Detroit, and he had a deck tech this weekend. He's like, oh, Michael Jacob's playing my deck. And I'm like, oh, well, if he calls it trash, you should feel honored. And then it's, a few minutes later, he's like, yep, wrong trash.
Yep.
Oh, was it?
It's Ken Crocker.
Kevin Crocker. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Let's take a look at Hypnotic Siren, speaking of mono blue. So this is just a blue mana symbol, just one blue, for a 1/1 with Bestow. So it has Bestow 7, so blue, 5. It says flying. You control enchanted creature, and then enchanted creature gets +1/+1 and has flying. This is similar to, do you guys remember Avacyn All-Star
Spirit Away,
which I always want to call Spirited Away, a lovely Hayao Miyazaki film. But this card, at first I saw it, I was like, oh, this is just the worst Spirit Away. But I was like, nah, that's not an accurate you know, kind of an analysis of it, because you have a 1/1 for, you have a flying man, you know, so that is advantageous early game, and then you have this huge late game spell stealing creatures and giving them more power and toughness and giving them flying.
This makes Nykthos very good in mono blue.
I agree.
You could lead off with this as a 1/1 flyer. It's, you know, you've already shown a couple times, you know, Siren's Familiar is one, what, 2 Protors now. I mean, it's pretty good. And then, you know, you have a 1/1 flyer that also just happens to scale. You know, that when you have Nykthos in play, it won't even be that difficult to just do this. Like, this feels like a really, really good example of what Bestow should feel like to me. Like, this is useful at both parts of the game. You know, the middle's a little but you get some value out of it no matter where you see it, which is nice. I was also, like, I was telling Dave this, I've been, like, tinkering around with lists. There's a couple ways to bounce enchantments in the set. And, like, there's ways where you could just, like, play this and then, like, and, you know, like, oh, I have to return this to my hand later. And, like, oh, by the way, you forgot to return this to my hand. Like, by the way, now it's just this.
Right.
So the card is, I don't know, it's definitely going to see play, I think. But
yeah, I think it definitely, again, it could be one of those things that Mono Blue picks up, unlike More of the Gods. So Mono Blue didn't pick up anything in More of the Gods. So now they're just getting kind of a couple of cards.
It's already got a couple of goodies. Yeah, this is definitely going to go in Mono Blue. It gives that deck finally a reason to get rid of those stupid Judge's Familiars that just are terrible. So I honestly think it just swaps in right there. I mean,
yeah, most certainly. Blue's kind of doesn't have a whole lot of stuff. I do want to talk about Riptide Chimera
again.
Riptide Chimera.
That's a card I was referring to. That it's drawback, quote unquote.
Oh yeah, it's a return a card. Yeah, so this is exactly kind of blends right into it. It's a 3/4 for 2 and a blue. Yeah, it has the what is it? What's that artifact creature? Esperzoa.
Yes,
it has the Esperzoa drawback, but instead for enchantments.
It's
so,
got a shark head.
it's a shark fish. Shark bird fish. It has a piranha head and a shark head. It's actually pretty fucking awesome.
I like this one. You know, there's a lot of interesting... I was talking about, like, Dragon's Mantle is an interesting thing to have to bounce in, you know, drawing cards. And it's a little slow, but, I mean, for the flyer that you're getting, a 3/4 body out of a 3-drop, it's not terrible. So,
No, not at all.
I mean, to be fair, I'm also the guy that played, like... Fettergeist in a sideboard of a deck for a long time that was just
so yeah, that card was good though.
That card was no, I mean everyone questioned it. Like that card was insane. The green decks so I had no way to get around it. So like the body is relevant, so it has a chance to see, you know, there's a little bit of action.
Oh yeah, I definitely agree. You guys want to talk about Sage of Hours?
I think we did.
Did we?
I think we did too. We talked about like possibility for MV combos and it was cool and yeah.
Wow, you can use it with a Spike Feeder combo.
Yeah.
Take it for the turns, Whee! But beyond that, like
yeah, so read the card. Play it if you want. Probably don't though. Did we talk about
Sigil? Then again, we're not the police.
did we talk about Sigil Starfish?
Do we want to talk about Sigil Starfish?
It's an interesting card.
Should we talk about standard playable cards or cards that you wouldn't mind having art on your wall?
I got a shitty look for saying like I want to talk about Skybind. You're like Sigil Starfish.
It's a starfish. My girlfriend saw a starfish once, so we had to talk about this card.
But I mean, like we've already established that scrying, even if scry for one, is powerful. Like it's a powerful effect. This is a card that could be played early that can act as a blocker and give you filter basically on all your draws eventually. So I don't think it's a bad card. I don't think it's like, you know, powerful, but it's a common.
I mean,
I compare this
to Omen Speaker. So Omen Speaker lets you scry to immediately and gets to block and also trade for small creatures. This doesn't let you scry for another turn after it. So if you're playing, you're probably playing this in a deck that's playing Supreme Verdict anyways. So the thing is, I don't see you getting much value out of this.
Sure.
I mean, I guess it's fine. But I don't know if that's the card, at least right now, that I actively want to be like, man.
Yeah, I mean,
slot it in.
This is going to be competing against cards like Nyx Fleece Ram.
Yeah, it's going to
and like blue white decks. Well. It's like, I don't know.
I can really see it. I just want to throw it out. You know, people have talked about it.
It's a fun card. I think a lot of people. This is going to be a fan favorite card. But
oh yeah, I mean, how many Altars of Patric are going to be floating around?
No, this is Patric.
To be fair, when you were scrolling down through the art, Mike, I looked at that card and thought, if I were going to mass collect any card, it may be that one. You know, the guys have like 500. Whatever's, I would mass collect that, Morgan. I would never play one.
That's fine.
Never put it in the sleeve, but I would buy a 40-cent binder to put 100 of them in.
You know, if you ever see Jordan at any events going forward, and you have any
don't give me those
amount of Sigil Starfish, please give them to Jordan.
Someone just comes up and is like, I got you all these.
Just
and
large.
Say, oh man, I'm gonna throw them all away when you walk away.
Just stacks on stacks.
Go to the strip club and make a great Sigil Starfish. Like
actual retail value, 10 cents.
Hey, Diamond, you want to make a quick $6? You have to go to your local LGS.
Sigil Starfish.
taking me to the VIP room for my sigil.
Yeah. Is there anything else that we should talk about in blue before we move out? I kind of want to talk about Triton Shorewalker, but Shore Stalker.
Oh, that card is bad, and you should feel God. Bad.
I'm just saying it's a relevant creature type. It's a one drop, and it's unblockable. I understand that if you're going to play it a Merfolk, most of the time your creatures are unblockable. Most of the time. But sometimes they're not.
They counter things.
Sometimes they possibly let you draw cards and manipulate your opponent's draws within the same set. But yeah, this card will see a lot of play.
All right. No, it won't. But all right. We already established that. I just want to mention it, just in case no one has seen
house.
It.
Thanks for showing up tonight, Morgan. We couldn't have done this without the equipment.
Yeah, no shit.
Wow.
Wow.
I love you so much.
Move on to black.
I'm not much of a help, guys. I don't know.
It's all right. Who wants to start?
Brain Maggot.
All right, we'll start with Brain Maggot.
So we talk about Banishing Light being the fixed Oblivion Ring. Brain Maggot is the fixed Mesmeric Fiend, where you get to take a card out of your opponent's hand and keep it there until the maggot dies.
Right.
This card is like Mesmeric Fiend saw a lot of play, and so did what's the white black one?
Tides of Hollow Scholar.
So this card is interesting, especially like in the black aggro decks where you can just go like Thoughtseize Brain Maggot, and then your opponent's like, well, I wish I could right. spells to cast. Yeah. And you're like, hey, take all this.
Synclarctor on turn three, even. Yeah.
Oh, geez. Yeah, I think it definitely slots into aggro decks. I don't think Mono Black Devotion really is interested in this card.
And it's even in the aggro decks, its body is a little...
Yeah.
You want to definitely get certain matchups, I feel, but... Yeah.
Yeah, it might be a sideboard card against, you know, possibly blue-white or something like that.
Yeah,
I like this card because play your Brain Maggot. I mean, you even play it against, the effect's fine enough in your aggro deck just because I'll take your neg one effect. I'll take your Drown in Sorrow. I'll take your Wild Blight.
I take your removal spell.
Yeah, your Golgari Charm, whatever.
I thought these are removal spell. Have a creature on the board. It's a 1/1, but have a creature and take your other.
Right, it's a bestow target. It's a whatever, you know.
Yeah. It is also, it's also an enchantment, which is interesting. Like, if you're talking about decks, like, if we're talking about black white anyways, like, Eidolon Countless Battles likes this card a lot, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it wants auras anyways, but, like, it's nice to throw it on here and just go to town.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like I like these kind of cards in the format. This is not, like, anything that's going to look at and go, like, they're not looking at this like they're looking at Thoughtseize and going, man, this is super powerful. But
right.
It's the kind of card that can just, like, if timed correctly and you get to make the choice, which is very important, and, you know, you can, you know, good players can do well with it.
So. Right, and it's just information. Like, any card that gains information is always nice. So, we have another. We did want to mention the Dictate. It's Dictate of Erebos, so it's 3 black flash, Grave Pact.
Yeah, Grave Pact.
So whenever a creature you control dies, each opponent sacrifices a creature. Now, Grave Pact effects. Is there any even one that's even? It's just Grave Pact, right?
I mean, Grave Pact has been like I was looking the other day. Grave Pact is it's been reprinted a bunch of times. And
it's still like a $12
card. $12 card for each one. So
yeah, so
it's really popular in Commander.
It is, but I mean, like, just financially speaking, like...
The effect is powerful.
The effect is powerful. I don't think it's... There's a home for it.
Probably not.
There's some cards that we'll talk about a little later on that might enable such a strategy to be played.
That's fair. And I think the other idea with it, too, is we don't have anything right now, but if the Hexproof decks come back, like...
That's
true. This is a way to deal with, a nasty Hexproof creature that isn't Sigarda, Host of Errands.
We don't have to worry about that one right now.
I ain't sacrificing nothing! Yeah, Sigarda sounds like a chain smoker.
So, yeah, definitely, you know, I think that, again, anything with stapled on it is powerful.
Right, typically. But you combine this with cards like... What's the card I'm thinking about? The black white guy. Sacrifice Creature.
Oh, Cartel Aristocrat.
Cartel Aristocrat. Or like Verals.
Oh, that could be interesting. Yeah, I really thought about that.
I love chaining my two drop aggro card with my 5-drop enchantment.
Hey, man. I agree. I'm just saying.
Powerful. The effect is powerful. I'm just, you know, being an asshole. That's cool.
But then you have things like Necromancer that kind of give you a little bit more legs, too. We're just assembling F&M combo deck here. Sorry, guys.
Why does everything get legs?
I don't understand. I'm sorry.
You're like the weird Vincent Price from Edward Scissorhands.
Yes,
like,
everything gets legs.
You get legs. And then you're walking the legs over to the poor guy, and then you fall over and the porcelain cracks, and they're stuck with scissor legs for the rest of their lives.
I would totally watch Edward Scissorhands.
I wouldn't watch Edward Scissorhands.
But only because I thought it was a porno.
Hold on here. I have to address this. Have you never seen Edward Scissorhands?
I have no idea what you're talking
about.
Oh,
my God.
Oh, good Lord. That's,
I have no
that
idea
is not,
what you're talking about.
That is not for the podcast.
Is that like a horror movie?
Just earlier, Jordan said he never played Mike Tyson's Punch-Out.
I mean,
hurt my soul.
Kids these days.
I understand Jeez. That Jordan is younger than us, but not by much.
I'm much younger than Dave. Like,
that's first of all,
thanks, man.
Very
what,
rude.
10 years, eh?
Oh, man.
I was just kidding.
No.
I use a lot of stuff at your house, so.
You use a lot of stuff in my house.
So who has another black card that
I don't
we
even know what
about?
That means.
Let's move to Extinguish All Hope.
All right.
So the art on this is sweet because you have all the black, well, most of the black gods all lined up. Which is kind of cool because you have Farika and you have Phoenix and you have Erebos himself. So this is destroy all non-enchantment creatures. So it's a straight up wrath effect in black, which we haven't got. Like we've had like Black Sun Zenith or like Mutilate, but we haven't had like a straight up
destroy.
Now, granted, non-enchantments is a big deal because
there are a lot of good enchantment creatures.
there's a lot of innocuous like things you wouldn't even recognize that God, you guys are terrible.
No.
Anyways. So you have some interesting things it does leave behind. You also have the ability to like set yourself up for this.
Yeah,
like
you try to turn it into like a one-sided.
Even
wrath.
Like looking back at like Brain Maggot, we're like, oh, you're casually an enchantment creature. Well, you're sticking around.
And again, things like the 5/5 creature that we'll get to eventually. Things like the 3/3 flyer.
Oh yeah,
master,
I mean, yeah, for sure.
Master of Cruelties, but Herald of Cruelties.
Herald, excuse me.
It's
a Herald of Torment.
Herald of Torment.
We did it.
Not Master of Cruelties.
No,
not the
not
one
paying
four.
Attention, so we did it. But Master of Cruelties is
that's
a different card. But it does cost six, so it's a little slow.
It's definitely an effect that Mono Black will want.
It's an effect that they've been essentially every time a good black card is printed when people say Mono Black is back, which it has been now for an entire block. But it's the wrath effect that people normally look for, and this is get him out of here. So.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with this card, the 6 mana doesn't matter as much. Like, with the White Wraths, you really want a 4 mana Wrath because sometimes you need to lean on that. Like, okay, I need to Wrath on turn 4 so I can stabilize.
You have other removal spells.
Yeah,
is good,
Black has a lot of removal, so you can actually stabilize for a while, before you need to cast this. So you don't need to lean on it as much.
You actually have, in Black, you have a way to, like, You can make the board very awkward when you have a Wrath. That's one of the reasons Esper is so effective. It's like, well, if I don't commit to the board, then I'm just blown out by this Doomblade. And then once I start committing to the board, then I'm blown up by Extinguish All Hope. So I definitely think, the card's a powerful effect in the color that hasn't had this effect for a little while.
Yeah, and it kind of definitely, marks up the want of decks to have some number of enchantment creatures at some point in time. So.
Yeah, that's true. Like, hey, I don't care. My Boonsider's sticking around.
Right. Or like, Corsair Crew Fix. That card just... Yeah, gains a lot from that, so you have to keep your 2/4, but it's something that's relevant. We already talked a little bit about Gnarled Scarhide, so play that card if you're going to play Mono Black Aggro. Like, it's just what that deck wants, so, yeah.
Master of the Feast.
Master of the Feast. So this is an interesting card.
Big fat demon.
Big fat demon.
I've actually seen Jordan without a shirt. This is pretty close.
Oh, man.
Pretty close.
Call Klug. We got an altar.
Oh, man.
Jordan's... Can it be that weird face thing, the one you had on paper?
Yeah.
Sure.
Picture you're in pain, like...
Please. Yeah. Please. No, so...
I was going to say, somebody saw there was a Feaster of Hopes or like Eater of Hope in last set, and there was a really skinny demon that looked a lot like this one. And someone said, apparently, Hope is fattening when they leaked to this card.
That's awesome. So he is one black for a flying 5/5 enchantment creature demon. What's the downside? Because all these overpowered black creatures
could possibly be the downside.
What? I mean, come on.
There's no way they wouldn't put a 3-mana.
Well, it looks like that at the beginning of your upkeep, each opponent draws a card. So that seems fairly downside-ish.
Fairly downside-ish. Well, I mean, they're dead in 5 or 4 turns, so it's only
right.
A couple
extra
cards.
What's 4 extra cards? What could they draw that could even?
So I've heard both sides of this argument so far. Like, I'm very much in the camp of I don't want to ever cast this card, but in this format we have things like Chain of the Rocks and Detention Sphere are two of our biggest forms of removal. So even if you draw them into removal, the argument is you may draw them into sorcery speed removal, but. I don't like that argument at all.
Right.
Like this card has is very powerful for being a three mana card, but giving your opponent cards, like a competent opponent that, you know, knows how card advantage is. Like I think I mentioned before how like cards like this kind of make me sad because, like, you know, newer players are going to be like, oh man, like look, it's a 5/5 for 3, and then your really competent opponent is like, yeah, I'll draw some cards.
This might have been played back in the day when they had, like, Dark Ritual in Standard. Dark Ritual this guy.
So we're talking about bad Standard combo decks. Play your Master Thiefs. You know, okay, so trigger on the stack of my upkeep, flashing my Notion Thief.
Wow!
He's drawing all the cards.
Oh, and I already brought that up, and someone was like, that's not how that works. And I'm like, oh, I'm pretty sure that's how it works.
Yeah, that's how it works.
But, where did you bring that up at?
In one of our local community groups. Okay. That, you know, we had a good, healthy discussion about the card.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You could also extinguish all their hopes with this card in play.
Yeah, see, and then they have, like, then you have a 5/5.
That's a combo, right?
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. Wrathing and then letting them draw extra cards. That's the plan.
Oh, wait, I think they get some back. Oh. Yeah. Oh.
That's why this card's bad.
It's powerful.
I mean, it might be fun and limited.
It's powerful. It's
for your opponents.
It is really. I'm kind of in the middle of it.
Please cast this against me,
sir. Do you have Master Feast in your deck? Yay!
I think that at some point in time I might die to this card in Standard format. I'll just say that. But let's go ahead and we'll take a look here at maybe. Let's move it to Silence the Believers. Have you guys seen that one? It's the
this card's sweet.
It's the Strive card that might see, you know, constructed play.
As the token religious guy, this card scares me.
Do you feel like some overtones with it that seem possibly offensive to you?
Hey, we could recreate this card right now. Cut his mic.
And yeah, so it's two.
We don't need the Strive cost. There's no other targets.
So it's
there's only one that's so well played.
So it's 2 black-black. Exile any number of target creatures and all auras attached to them, and has a Strive cost of an extra 2 and a black. So this kind of I see a lot of people talking about this maybe in mono-black, if that's still a deck. Kind of makes Nykthos maybe you want to play that in your mono-black list to kind of power this out. Kills gods if they're active, which is nice.
Kills
at instant speed.
Kills all the bestowed creatures. Like, the mono-black aggro deck, like, is not happy when they're like, I'll bestow Herald of Torment. You're like, sweet, get out of here. Like,
yeah, that's really nice.
Also, and then, with Battlefield Thaumaturge, it only costs 5 to target 2 creatures.
Oh, man. Wombo combo right there. Also, it kills things like Obsidat, which I think is really huge. Having instant speed removal, I guess they already have things like Hero's Downfall, but you know, this is kind of a nice little addendum.
Apparently this card is voice crackingly huge, guys.
Yeah. But also things like it prevents them from whipping it back with Whip of Erebos as well, because you get the exile effect, so that's pretty nice.
Yeah, I mean, this is a card that's not going to be a 4 of. This isn't going to be like 4x Hero's Downfall, but you might see 1, possibly 2 show up.
And
I could see it played in Esper decks.
Yeah, yeah,
this
most
reminds
certainly
me a lot of what was it? Sever the Bloodline.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
An effect that, you know, only saw 1 or 2, but like.
It was powerful.
It was powerful. Yeah. I mean, I like it a lot. I mean, I feel like Strive is. Most of the cards I see with Strive that are playable, like, this doesn't feel like, you know, a lot of times you'll see, like, oh, Strive, 7 to make an additional copy. And it's like, oh, okay, well, this isn't that bad.
No. I mean, you every once in a while, you'll be able to get a, you know, nab another creature with it, which is fine. So, I think that's everything for black, except for Worst Fears, LOL.
actually, I want to talk about Squelching Leeches for a second.
Okay.
So, Squelching Leeches is a 4, it's a 4 mana X, or XX, where X is equal to the number of swamps you control. Now, I know Nightmare hasn't exactly seen play in a long time, but this is much more aggressively cost, you know, than Nightmare is, and there is a mono-black deck in the format that is just playing essentially infinite swamps.
Sure.
So, I don't know, I feel like this card is interesting, only just because, like, out of all the... Because there's this whole cycle. We haven't talked about all of them because they're not all even close to playable. But there's a whole cycle of cards that have, you know... The blue one is bounce based on islands you have. The white one is exile a creature based on planes you have. The green one, which I know Dave was all excited about, we'll get to, is like look for a creature based on the number of forests you have. And this one with swamps, like as a draw late in the game, like if you cast it on turn 4, more than likely have a 4/4, maybe a 3/3 if you had a Mutavault. But if you draw late in the game, then you're just looking at a threat that's just like, oh boy, here's my 8/8, my 9/9, my 10/10 that. you know, we're both drawing off the top, and I'm going to end the game in two turns. So
yeah.
I'm not saying it's an amazing creature, but definitely I think it's something that, you know, when you're pushing devotion, this card's like, hey, by the way, you're already playing 20 swamps. Why not me?
Sure.
Now, does that make your pack rat a lot more interesting? Like, you wouldn't play this almost kind of pack rat where you want to be ditching those lands, see, right?
And again, like, if Mono Black's still a thing post-rotation, maybe this is where it gets a better chance to shine than right now.
Yeah, because you have to
think about discarding your swamps. I think Demon's better than this card right now. But
definitely is. Definitely is. But I feel like this would be one of those, like, at the uncommon level where it's, like, it'll be sort of forgotten about, and then if Mono Black's, you know, which very well could still be a thing post-rotation, it's like, by the way, this guy's still here.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, most certainly.
Lorgoist has seen play before, so.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, that's pretty much it for black, because we're not going to talk about worse spheres. Let's move into red. Where do we want to start here? I guess
so. The flavor. This has nothing to do with constructed playable cards, but Morgan doesn't care about that, so it's fine. Bearer of the Heavens is the coolest flavored card.
No, that is actually a flavor fail, because it's not a legendary creature. So it represents what? Atlas, correct?
Yes. Right? So technically, it's a way to the underworld, so that's awkward as well. But
yeah, you know.
I mean, in the concept of magic, I'm thinking multiple planes, so there would be multiple heavens, right? Like, I guess, like, there could be multiple of these gentlemen who hold
up. But it's heavens, so he's holding up all of them.
So if you look at it, like, Elspeth had to, like, climb his back to get into Nyx, right?
Right.
Anyway, I think it's cool.
I think it's cool.
And the effect is really cool, given what it's claiming the guy does.
It should have been legendary.
Like, I don't want to open this at the pre-release.
No.
I like, it's just a card that I think it's nice to look at and then go, oh, that's cute, and then keep scrolling.
Okay. Well, let's move on to the dictate of this set, of this color. It's Dictate of the Twin Gods.
Furnace of Wrath
with Flash.
So have you noticed that most of the effects of these cards are taking cards that used to have three mana symbols in there? Like, Furnace of Wrath is three red and a colorless. Now it's two red and three colorless. Dictate of Erebos, like, that, you know,
it's three black and one.
Three black and a colorless. Like, it's like, okay. This doubles all damage it's dealt, though.
Yeah, two creatures. No, to permanents and player,
which
is actually very important, because Furnace of Wrath was just creatures and players.
Right, so planeswalkers.
Yeah, hits planeswalkers. So, you know, obviously Furnace of Wrath is not necessarily a blockbuster or anything like that, but that a change.
Has this card ever been, like, really exciting? Like, I remember when I used to play casual games. Like, this is the old, like, put a bunch of charge counters on your Brigadian Bazaar and then fireball people for 20. But, no, Brigadian Bazaar? No,
I don't know what that does.
That's the that was the Mercadian Masks charge land where you could add counters and then you could remove X counters.
Oh, the red one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
Sure.
I mean, but, like, again, having Flash makes this effect at least a little more spicy. But it's I don't know.
Five's a lot for the decks that would want to play this.
Yeah, like, most certainly. Yeah, it's just something to talk about.
Possibly Burn would want this. You, like, end a turn, flash this in, and then light them on fire.
Sure, maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. Probably not, though.
Probably not.
Nah, it's not a great card. But it's interesting. Let's go ahead and we'll take a look at Eidolon of the Great Revel. So this is, again, one of the ones from the enchantment and creatures stapled together. So this is red for a 2/2, and then whenever a player casts a spell with converted mana cost 3 or less, Eidolon of the Great Rebels deals 2 damage to that player. So it's a Pyrostatic Pillar. So Pyrostatic Pillar is a Legacy Burn card.
Well, so Mark Rosewater wrote a blog about this card.
Yeah.
And he didn't know what it did, really. Because he's just like, yeah, this turns all your burn spells into double burn spells in, like, the post. And, like, there was a post on Reddit that was like, oh, yeah, by the way, I get all my magic news from Reddit. It was like, he has no idea what this card does.
Well, and I think the sad thing is, like, if he can mess that up, again, this is another card that show a newer player a Pyrostatic Pillar, and they will just go,
Why
would you ever play this card?
Right.
But it's, I don't think it'll see standard play. I saw a lot of people, like, slotting it into the aggressive red decks, but I just feel like
I don't think it'll see standard play until
I think there's too many decks that can punish the red deck for shooting itself. Like, there's just too many ways to, like, all of a sudden, like, you're losing because you've dealt 6 or 6 to 8 damage to yourself.
And I don't think that you would want to play this over Ash Zealot. I think Ash Zealot is a better slot. So I think until Ash Zealot, as long as Ash Zealot's in the format, that this card probably won't see play. And then after that, it's still a question.
I think it depends on what flavor of red you're playing, though. I think Red Devotion may want to play this over Ash Zealot, potentially. I think it's better in some matchups. But Yeah, it's probably going to see more play post-rotation.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I think that.
But, I mean, I don't think it's out of the question.
I don't think it's going to see very much standard play. I really don't.
I would disagree with that. Like I said, if it has a chance to play, it'll be after standard. Unless something happens and it just gets broke.
The modern, however.
Yeah, I think
everything costs three or less.
I think, yeah, modern bird decks kind of want this card a little bit, maybe.
Man, I really wish I could afford double red. Man, all my stuff costs like seven or more.
Okay. Except for all the things
that's
you cycle to get there, but
that's cool.
That's
so greedy.
Shut your mouth.
You can't play that.
And it's, I mean, it may see play in Legacy too, but I also feel like Pyrostatic Pillar itself is probably still just better in Legacy because you can't just randomly Swords to Plowshares it.
Right, so. Bolt, Swords, anything.
But again, continuing the theme of uncommon old enchantments being slapped on the creatures now.
Right, exactly. I think we don't really talk about anything until we go to Magma Spray.
Magma Spray.
Yeah. So, this
by the way, Magma Spray, Jordan, doesn't target players.
No, yeah. I know that. No, so, okay, so in the show chat, I posted, like, hey, this is just like a instant speed Pillar of Flame effect. And everybody's like, oh, it doesn't hit the player, noob. And I'm like, I didn't mean that it did that. I just mean, like, the
instant
speed.
But it sounded like it did,
so
we made fun of you.
No, so the instant speed of that's really relevant, and it's a lot better than Pillar, because a lot of that, I don't know.
It goes back and forth. So this is a reprint. Magma Spray was what in?
Was it Lorwyn?
I think it was Lorwyn or Mirrodin, something like that.
Not
Mirrodin. No, it was up higher.
Yeah, it was Lorwyn block somewhere.
Yeah.
These are so old.
Well, I didn't play back then. I just know where cards come from.
It seems like a really awkward reprint.
It
seems like it doesn't go with a set at all.
So the question is this a plant? Like, could this be relevant in the next set that comes out? Since it doesn't really fit,
you can, like,
here now.
Bring back Undying or something?
I don't know. I mean, like,
it's too early for that, right?
So
persist.
There could be things that come back that this is relevant against. So I definitely agree with Dave. Like, you have Voice of Resurgence, and then you have things like Zathard Necromancer. But there could be, like, the next set could be somewhat graveyard-focused, because there's a lot of good graveyard-focused cards in block. There's even, like, a Reanimator deck, even without, the next set that's coming out in the fall. So graveyard could be relevant, and this could be a clue to it. So
if we do get fetch lands, like Deathrite Shaman gets really good, and then
which will have rotated out by then.
Well, that's correct. They won't put this in the same thing.
Deathrite Shaman still just see the thing is Deathrite Shaman still just dies to shock, which you should just be playing shock for the most. Like right now, you should just be playing shock for the most part because you want to go to the face. If you want this effect, I'm not saying you should just be playing shock. Like everybody. Shock!
Everyone play shock. It's the best.
No, play shock. If you're going to be playing Magnus right now, you might as well just play shock.
Yeah, I would agree.
I would think that. Yeah. That's also true. Unless, like, somehow Voice Resurgence just becomes, like, all-star, like, or if there is a deck that focuses around things like, you know, Zathard Necromancer and another Mythic Rare we're going to talk about in the future.
The certain god.
A certain god in the future where you might want to exile creatures when they die. You never know. It could happen. So it's an interesting card. Maybe we can speculate on it being a plant. Hopefully, fingers crossed. Who knows?
I think it's a burn spell.
Thank you.
If you put water on it, you'll actually ruin your magic card. I'm really proud of that joke, Mike. That was really good. You did a good job with that.
I really don't like that.
I'm so proud.
I really don't like that. So. We have Sigiled Skink. By the way, first time that I read that, thought it said Sigiled Skink.
We talked about Mogus's Warhammer before.
Last week, right?
Oh, yeah, we did. Oh. So sorry.
I'm just letting
so
you know. I saw
some of us don't go on vacation 2 weeks in a row.
Also true.
Did we talk about Spite of Mogus at all?
I know we had not talked about Spite of Mogus.
All right. I don't think it's a very good. I think.
All right, moving on then.
I don't think it's very good.
This card is bad. Next.
it does combo with Boris Reckoner. That's something to point out that someone tried to shove down my throat.
God,
so.
Can you die in a fire, please?
But so you do have what Pyre Harvest or Harvest Pyre?
Yes,
that it was
also an instant.
Also an instant. I guess that's true. Moving on.
Spite of Mogus is interesting because it's another it's another one mana bit of interesting removal and one mana that scries, but it is pretty dependent. I don't think it's that terrible. I mentioned it before. I think, there may be like a blue or red deck that wants this kind of, or just like blue red if you see a Keranos deck that may just want this piece of removal for that scales. But overall, I don't think it's going to be that great.
Yeah. So green. I think that's it for red. We'll move on here until green. And almost the first thing, I think we should probably touch on Basara Tower Archer, right? It's a.
I mean, I don't know if she's that pretty. If you want to.
You should probably ask for permission versus what he's saying.
She, I mean, she does have hex roof.
Yeah, I literally can't touch that. But no, okay, so it's another hexproof creature. So it's green, two green and green for a hexproof creature. anyway,
it is a reacher.
It's like hexproof reach around. I mean,
where can I buy one?
Why can't I stop this? Hexproof, baby.
Where can I find one of those?
This is only relevant if, you know, the hexproof deck continues to be a thing, which I don't.
Well, it's also too green. So devotion wise, it does add, you know, those mana symbols, though.
Mana symbols.
This card will definitely see play. For sure.
Yeah, somewhere, I imagine.
I mean, with hexproof also getting mana confluence, that's another one of the decks that benefits from that.
Oh, most certainly.
I think the double green on this won't be as big of a deal.
No, and like that. I think that deck is almost kind of starved for hexproof creatures. There really aren't that many that they can play. So having access to a reasonably early drop that is hexproof will be relevant.
Yeah, it's definitely going to add to the consistency of that deck. So, and it even makes it so that you don't even necessarily need to play three colors. I mean, you could play two colors.
Right, yeah, most certainly.
So, we'll see.
Yeah. Moving on, we'll go to Dictate of Karametra. So, this is the Heartbeat of Spring with Flash on it. So, three green. So, this one kind of got a steep price increase, didn't it? Yeah, Heartbeat was...
More!
Because Heartbeat's, what, two and a green? Well,
why
so...
wouldn't Karametra get the worst Dictate?
Oh man, so sad.
This is another really cool EDH card.
Yeah, so basically.
Me and Mike said the same thing at the same time. EDH and non playable. Hello, get it, guys.
So this is obviously all your lands make. Make double manas, basically, for all players.
I will say, if there was a playable combo deck that wanted this card, the Flash would be very relevant.
Oh, yeah, most certainly.
For that, because you could end a turn, play this, and then go off on your turn. So
yeah.
Unfortunately, I don't think there is one of those decks in Standard now.
Yeah, there's just not a home for it. It's kind of expensive, so. Eidolon of Blossoms. So this is the one of the pushed constellation cards. This is what the second one we've talked about so far.
The only pushed constellation card.
Yeah,
I mean Skybind isn't exactly pushed.
No, I guess. Okay, so the only pushed per se, two green for a 2/2. Enchantment creature spirit, and whenever you cast it or another enchantment, draw a card.
Different. Whenever an enchantment comes into play. Remember, Constellation is at least a little bit better because whenever it enters the battlefield.
Sure, not cast.
Because it combos with things like, even like Heliod.
Right. So, this is just an enchantress effect. We've seen it many times. There's a legacy deck around this.
It's been a while since it's been green again, though, because they switched it to Mesa Enchantress for a little while, which is white.
Yeah.
So apparently green got it back.
Apparently.
Went down to Jamaica, got its groove back.
Damn it, you beat me to that joke. You son of a bitch. So yeah, I don't like the card very much, Michael ID. I mean, I understand that like these effects always get played, but...
I think this effect will get played like, you know, some slow giant enchantress monstrosity that plays like Mana Bloom and like Sphere of Resistance, like Pillow Forts for days.
So just like the most miserable FNM deck
hate playing against it. It being a 4-drop makes it rough, but obviously it's pretty easy to ramp into it on turn 3 if you want to, and then, you know, you at least get some value out of it. But I don't know. I don't think it'll be very good. But again, it will be played.
Yeah. All right. I'll believe you. I don't think that it won't. What do we want to move on to next? I mean, I guess we haven't really talked about the fonts. But they're all pretty bad.
I think this is the only playable one.
Maybe?
Fonts it's maybe. Just not Farseek, which is really sad.
It's not Rampant Growth.
You're not going to get Farseek again. Like, you may, even if you do, then you won't have, you know, Shocklands.
Right.
I would take a Rampant Growth in this format 100%. But
this one only costs 3 mana.
Yeah, but it's like, in theory... Like if you're ramping and then ramping, like if you have Elf turn 1 and then this turn 2, like it's not.
It still costs 3 mana. I mean, Fonts of Fertility is 1 mana green enchantment that you sacrifice for green and a colorless 2 Rampant Growth. Search for a basic land card. honestly, depending on what M14 brings us, or M15, I mean, brings us,
yeah.
If we don't get a, you know, a rampant growth effect out of there, then this actually may be the rampant growth effect in the format. So
The awkward thing about it, too, though, is, like, in this format, I would assume if you're playing a ramp-style deck, you want to have a lot of Scry lands in your deck.
Right, exactly.
So it's like if you're going to choose between playing turn one this or turn one Scryland, and then if you want to play a Scryland on turn two, you can't activate it.
Right, exactly.
It's, it doesn't really fit the curve at all.
No, not at all. I saw this card and I was like, so close. Why? Why do you tease me? We'll go ahead. Now, we do have a, like I said, there are graveyard-based decks that we have in the format. Krufix's Insight. Did you guys see this card at all? It's
what does it do?
It's the two and a green.
No, tell us.
Reveal the top six cards of your library. Put up to three enchantment cards from among them into your hand, and then put the rest of your revealed cards into the graveyard. So this is sort of like a commune with the gods. That's a little bit more limited, but it digs you a lot deeper. I only bring that up because like the dredge cards, they do have a lot of enchantments that they do get to play that they may want, and this is just something that kind of gets you deeper. I don't know if it might just be too expensive at two to green, but
I mean it's interesting in tandem with commune to the gods or commune with the gods. I don't know whatever that card does, but I mean there could be some kind of enchantress style. Like we said, that plays both of those.
Right, and just get you all the enchantments that you can get. Yeah. I just thought that it was
a wacky, crazy deck.
An interesting common, and maybe something even to look at once we have Grizzly Salvage leave the format. So we still have something that digs pretty deep and gets relevant things with this being an enchantment block. So something I want to point out as a possibly playable common. Let's go ahead. We got a Centaur Lord, just in case you guys are wondering. Be excited.
I actually want to mention the Nessian Game Warden.
Oh, yeah. That.
I know Dave is all about this card for Cube, but I also feel like this card... So Nessian Game Warden is a 2-green and 3-colorless for a 4/5. When it enters the battlefield, look at the top X cards of your library where X is the number of forests you control. Reveal a creature from them and put it in your hand. And again, if Devotion, depending on how Devotion looks... Even post rotation of Ravnica block, this is the kind of card where you can play like some spicy one ofs in your Devotion deck, and then like have this as like your tutor. Like I just said when Return to Ravnica like rotates, so I'm thinking of like even now you can play this in the green deck and like start looking for your Sylvan Primordial or mm-hmm. something like that. And this card, what's nice is like before we had we had a terrible tutor. In the last set, and I can't remember what it was
called. Servitude?
No, it was the green one where you search for a creature that had like Trample or Hex.
Move Ollie Beast Tracker.
Yeah.
But you put it on top of your library, so you didn't actually get the card, whereas this one's like, put it in your hand. So you get the card out of it, which is nice.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely seems like you can do things like even fetch gods, so you don't have to play your Nylias as many as you want. They don't have to be like a 4-of, a 3-of. They can be like more of a 2-of or maybe even a 1-of.
I mean, this still makes tension. Like Dave said, if a deck that wants to ramp into a 5-drop is also the deck that's probably going to want Scrylands or something else. But yeah, the card itself, like the body is not terrible. And the effect is, the effect is the kind of thing where if you draw this late, then you're like, oh, well, this is, late in the game, rip this off the top. Then you're getting yourself probably a pretty impressive, 2-for-1 out of your creature anyways, which is nice. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like if it was if it was a 5-5, it'd be, like, snap playable. But
probably.
Since it's only a 4-5, it's not that much different, but it is.
No, it really is.
So...
Yeah, but it's definitely an interesting card. An interesting effect, most certainly. It kind of reminds me of like a mini Garrick, almost, like Big Garrick.
It's like don't get all of them. The green Augur Bolas.
The green Augur Bolas. And I feel like that effect is even better in green. Like, it feels like you're going to have more creatures than a blue deck would have, instants or sorceries. So, we already mentioned, Phineas Band, Warchief. Hey,
Ferris Band,
excuse me.
Phineas Band, Whisper.
Whisper. Ferris Band, Warchief, yeah. So you got your Centaur Lord, congratulations.
Can I mention Renowned Weaver for a second?
Oh, yeah, because...
we talk about the flavor. Renowned Weaver is the green 1/1 that can be sacrificed to make a spider. This is based off of the myth of Arachne.
Yeah.
Who, she was a really good, like... Taylor, and she said she could like make better, like more beautiful things than Athena could. And Athena was like, "Oh, really? Cool." And then, like, they had a competition, and of course, it doesn't matter what happens. These competition gods get mad, and people get turned into spiders. So Arachne was turned into a spider, so she could always weave beautiful silk. What a terrible way to exist. So, like, she had to look hideous, but she could also still make pretty things. It was really weird. But yep. So this woman turns into a spider.
Yeah, the flavor text on that's actually really cool, too. You think your weaving is beautiful as mine? Let me show you the... I can't read sideways. Let me show you the true meaning of the craft. That's sad. I would have known that.
Yeah, so yeah, it's cool. I think it's one of the cooler, like, little, like when you know, Morrow does his little article of, like, here's the different myths we are looking at. I'm going to be like, yeah, I knew that one. It was awesome. My God, so bad.
What?
Good
job.
Okay.
Great.
Glad you got that out, buddy.
This is another one. This is another one I want to talk about. Citizen tactics.
Citizen?
God damn it.
Well, how did you pronounce
Citizen,
it?
Citizen.
Citizen. What?
Citizen. Tactics. Citizen tactics. Whatever. Tomato, tomato. So it's one in a green, and it has a strive cost, and it's green beyond the first creature you target with it. And until the end of turn, any number of target creatures each get a +1/+1 and gain tap target creature fights another target creature. So this is an interesting answer green can incorporate for Master of Waves. They have a hard time dealing with that card, so, you know.
I think this is a good card in general.
Can also kill Pack Rat before they get it going.
Yeah, most certainly.
Like turn one elf, they play a Pack Rat. Kill your Pack Rat.
Right.
And it scales really well. It wins, like, as an instant. I think that's the thing that, like, as an instant, you could just be like, oh, by the way, end of turn. Let's have this battle. So many dead.
Just machine gun all your dudes.
Yeah, I don't know. I like this card a lot. I think it's going to see a lot of play.
I think so, too. And I don't see a lot of people talking about it. And there have been a few people that have kind of brought it up here and there. But this
I will say, Michael Jacobs discussed this a
little
bit.
Yeah, most certainly.
And I don't give him a lot of credit, but I think he's right about this card.
Yeah, so. I think he's right, too. It's, again, I guess the other pushed Strive card. And like I said, it gives green an answer that it doesn't have. So green needs this. They need an instant speed.
I really like this in a devotion deck. I do. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Like, you can play this green devotion deck, and then you have a bunch of creatures in play for your devotion, and then it activates your Nykthos, and be like, the war has begun.
Oh, man. So fun. Is that everything? I guess...
I want the full art of Solidarity of Heroes.
Aw, because they're friends.
Well,
his hand is so big.
Johnny's just awesome.
I get to be a Johnny.
I get to be your fair maiden? Is that what...
I don't think that
you could be one of those other guys in the background.
It's one of the awkward guys in porn that didn't get to have sex. You just standing in the background, like, looking at it. Like
this, isn't this the exact same art as the original Heroes Reunion with like Jared Capuchin?
I gotta go look at this. Like shaking hands and shit.
It's a Johnny and Elspeth, man.
I mean, but I think it's
best
like
friends forever.
Yeah,
talking about my best friend.
Not
look at
people
that,
in
Heroes Reunion. Look at this. It's Aladdin and Jared just shaking hands. It's like the same thing.
Nah, well.
I hate you.
Yeah, I call Jared.
Use new art.
They're kind of doing like a bro kind of like handshake type thing.
Yeah.
They got their own thing going on.
Fist bumpies.
Anyway. All right. I think the last card that I do want to touch on, just because it's an interesting thing that enchantment really doesn't have a lot of the time, is Strength of the Fallen. Again, this also looks at the graveyard for your creatures as well. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, so target creature gets +XX, where X is the number of creature cards in your graveyard.
Right. So this is a sorcery seed pump when it comes in, and then anytime you could, in theory, if you have any flash enchantments or anything like that, Boon Satyr, you get that pump again. It's interesting.
Weird. It still seems weird to me that it's like, I trigger on enchantments, but I check the creatures in your graveyard. It's like, how many damn hoops am I jumping through here?
Right.
No, yeah. I'm not saying it's like a good card, but I'm just saying it's an interesting effect.
It is an interesting effect.
Yeah, that doesn't necessarily appear on enchantments.
At least this one's in green, so it makes more sense if it's a plant.
Right, and exactly. Thank
the
you.
Weed? Is that what it... Oh.
No. No.
Artifacts.
No. All right, so we got through all the monocolor card. Let's get into some multicolor goodness.
Whatever, so, artifacts, just so you know.
God damn it.
No, multicolor. Artifacts are less because no one cares. So we are first. We got to talk about it, Johnny, right?
Johnny. Mr. 100 Life himself.
So, like, I like to think they were just, like, all drinking on the last night of R&D. And, like, the guys were just like, oh, wait, we never finished the Johnny card. And, like, Mike Rosewater's stoned out of his mind, and Zach Hill's, like, with a hooker in the back. And they're like, what do we do here?
Zach Hill's even on the set, but all right.
I know. Why is he with a hooker during an R&D meeting? Crazy question. Zach, we want an answer. But they were just like, well, we got to do something, man. And, like, Rosewater finishes a line of blow, and he's like, 100 life!
And then, we should really probably stop talking about Blizzard's employees doing terrible things. I'm just That's throwing that true. Out there.
We
not a jury in the world.
The opinions of Jordan do not match the opinions of At Your Instep or any of the other
or
members
Empire
of At
Game
Your
Center
Instep.
Or
anyone. Or anyone but
would like
fucking
to apologize
Jordan.
To all Mark Rosewaters that do cocaine during R&D meetings who ruin cards with their negate.
You're not.
Still a really good magic card, but.
So the ultimates. So the ultimates on the Planeswalkers are early.
Say again, I'm sorry.
The ultimates on the Planeswalkers are meant to be like game-winning effects, right?
Right.
I'm pretty sure nobody's ever beaten 100 life before, so I mean that's pretty good, right?
Mike did 72 damage at FNM once.
I beat a person 100 plus life.
I was joking.
Oh, we could.
Well,
I was
proud of it.
Listen, we
literally couldn't tell over
here. We literally can't judge a Planeswalker by its ultimate because that's not the end. That's not where what happens typically.
It's just funny though.
It is funny there's a card that literally says
it definitely has the shortest text for an ultimate.
That's true.
You look at the second ability is like a paragraph, and then it's just like this clean thing at the bottom. I for one can't wait to do a lap around FNM when I trigger my Archangel Athun off of its ultimate. Get 100 life, trigger, and then da 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 da.
It's still just one trigger.
Like Johnny is a 5-mana planeswalker that only ticks up until its ultimate,
right.
And has two really relevant abilities. I mean, we don't really care about the 100 life. It can either give three creatures +1/+1. So this is Reap What Is Sown, which is an uncommon from Born of the Gods. It's
right.
Literally that effect.
But it's a little bit more interesting because let me take a look here. I just want to read this. Hold on, real quick.
Oh, it's among 1, 2, or 3 target creatures.
Right,
control.
Right. So you can just +3/+3.
Yeah, you can like give a guy +3, which
you can't
is really
do that
good.
With Reap What Is Sown.
That is true. That is true. Yeah. And then the other one is look at the top 4 cards of your library. You may reveal an aura, creature, or planeswalker card from among them and put them into your hand. Put the rest in the bottom of your library. Which, I mean, again, essentially +1, draw a card. Right, and green, like you either hit a creature or a planeswalker or an aura, like gives you so much versatility. Like, compare this with Domri, where it's like, well, guess I'll leave this on top of my library. Don't really want, like, when you +1 Domri raid and you see a mountain and you're just like,
no.
Oh, it hurts so bad.
I don't want you here.
You know, like, whereas Johnny's like, even if you just see chaff, you're just like, well, at least you're on the bottom.
Right.
At least I'm
not drawing you. You irrelevant cards I hate.
Now, the only sad thing is in like standard, we don't have shuffle effects. So you could, like, see three things that you need. And they go to the bottom, which is awkward.
Yeah.
Well, that's fair.
But you're going to do it again next turn. You're going to see, ideally, 8 to 12 cards off of a Johnny. So, like.
So the Johnny also, like, +1s into Elspeth.
And yeah.
Once Elspeth is in play, you're like, make 3 guys. And Johnny's like, I'll make them bigger. and then you're like,
you
and then you go back to the card that Jordan likes so much. Where they're like,
they're shaking hands. Like,
we can do it together.
Do you think they made this, like, a top-down? Like, made it specifically to work with Elspeth?
I think they did. I think they meant for them to partner up. Which I think is pretty awesome.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I mean, one finds the other one, and it's just
I think the only flavor fail here is that Godsend is an enchantment as well. So like, you can't like Johnny can't go looking for Elspeth's weapon, and be like, Elspeth, catch Godsend.
Yeah, that's
that'd be so cool in a movie. Let me tell you,
that's kind of unfortunate, but oh well. But yeah, Johnny's good. He might be a little bit expensive, so if you open him in pre-release and trade him away, he'll probably drop later unless you really want to play him. You know, financial advice with Planeswalkers.
I'm just really excited that, like, one thing that I think the Wizards have been criticized for, like, red specifically, is, like, how they get sort of narrow in the other colors, right? And, like, I think they've done a really good job of, like, I know, Dave. They're really doing a good job of, like, finding alternative ways to draw cards in other colors. So, like, Chandra, the Exile effect makes sense for red, but also gives a little bit of card advantage. And, like, here for Ajani, like, green-white isn't going to get +1 draw card, but you are going to get +1 search for a relevant effect, which I think is something that's, I mean, I think desperately needed if you're going to start balancing the colors away from, like, you know, Sphinx's Rev, essentially. So, I like to see this.
Yeah, no, most certainly. Definitely something that's interesting to see. So, we'll go ahead and we'll move on. We'll go ahead and do you guys want to just move on to Eros?
Athreos?
No, we're not talking about. We're not talking about Athreos, are we?
I'm pretty sure we are.
Yeah, we are.
All right, excuse me. Athreos. Excuse me.
It's not on our list.
I apologize. It's not on the future list. I got confused. Athreos, god of Passage.
God of sweet electric guitar.
So one blue black. One blue black, one white black. Excuse
you
me.
You said that like
Phoenix
an idiot.
Wishes he was this good.
Yeah, he does.
Accurate, 100%. I can't say anything. I've opened in one with a lot of Phoenix, so can't say shit. So it has the typical God claws, and it's a 5/4, and it has a sweet effect that says whenever another creature you own dies, return it to your hand unless target opponent pays 3 life. That is a build around me effect. People see that effect. It's very spicy, and they want to construct decks around abusing that in some facet.
It's a powerful effect that's also aggressively costed.
Yep.
And I don't think it's that hard to turn Athreos on as well. Like, I think it's the one thing that's also relevant, where like a 3-drop that becomes a 5/4 indestructible by like turn 4 or 5. Like, that's pretty good.
It is pretty good. No, yeah, I'm not gonna lie.
Definitely one of the most hyped cards in this set. I think
100%.
It's generated a lot of buzz.
Yeah, him and probably a Johnny are pretty, kind of the high points of the
King of
set.
The Mythics.
but I definitely think that this card will see play. People will want to have archetype, have this as be an archetype, especially things like Zathar Necromancer in the format.
You're definitely going to want to play this card in an aggressive shell.
Yeah, you're going to want to be low to the ground.
You need to make it so that.
Many legs.
Them paying life is a real cost. You really have to make them choose. Yeah. Whereas if you're playing a control style deck, they'll just pay 3 life.
Right.
Don't care.
I also feel like I've seen a lot of people I've seen a lot of aristocrats lists already sort of resurfacing, which I think is an interesting archetype. But I've had a lot of people, like, Anger of the Gods is really good when you're playing Athreos. Like, it's just mm-hmm. like, oh, okay, cool, get out of here. Magma Spray as well is interesting when we go back to that card. But I also want to point out that, like, decks can certainly race this effect and actually never care. Like, I saw a lot of people saying, like, oh, man, you just get all these cards back. It's like, yeah, but if I'm the red deck and I Anger the Gods you so I can buy myself more time, I'm not going to pay any life. I'm going to make you spend the mana to cast those things again. That means you're committing all your mana back to the board while I get to do what I need to do. So I feel like a lot of people I've heard talk about this aren't looking at the... there's a tempo cost with playing this card.
Anger of the Gods would just remove the creatures anyway.
Well, but people were saying, like they'd sack them to... if they had a Cartel Aristocrat, sack them in response. But what I'm saying is, like, even if I get you to do that, then, like, you've got to pay your 8 mana again to commit to the board while I'm setting... So... This card's really good, don't get me wrong. And definitely, it gives some of the aggressive decks a little bit more reach where they just get to play this long game. But it also does make certain cards in the format possibly better again, like Rest in the Peace. Rest in the Peace.
OBB.
All up in this piece.
But Rest in Peace is really good against this card because it still requires the creature to die, and Rest in Peace doesn't let creatures die. Yeah. Or even things like... the Aegis.
Aegis of the God.
It's like, oh, I have Hexproof. Oh, you can't target with your effect. That's unfortunate.
I guess that just fizzles then.
So the ways around it.
Jordan's dying.
Yeah, I'm super sick. But sorry.
Like, this God, I think you're going to see a lot of it going forward. I'm kind of upset because there's not a piece. Oh, wait, there is a piece of removal to get rid of it. We'll get there, though. We'll get there.
In the future, yeah. So we'll go ahead and we'll look at the good old God of Victory.
We talked about Eros, actually.
We did him last time.
Okay, fine. Then we'll move on. And look at the God of Storms, then. We'll look at Karanos, God of Storms. So 3, blue-red, God Claws. And then...
God Claws. God Claws Van Damme.
And we'll
it's getting late.
The jokes are getting
worse. It is getting late. His effect is definitely interesting. So reveal the first card you draw of each of your turns. Whenever you reveal a land card this way, draw a card. Whenever you reveal a non-land card this way, Karanos deals 3 damage to target creature or player. So if you have a land card, you draw a card. Non-land, you bolt something.
Yeah, Karanos is... I don't know. I like Karanos a lot. I think it's going to be...
It's sweet.
One of the gods that you... I think the deck that plays this card may never care if Karanos is ever a creature.
Yeah, it's ever a creature, man.
Right.
Which is...
I think Chapin said that. He's like, this is really the only one where you don't even really care.
Yeah, it's whatever.
Yeah, if it casually... If for some reason you casually have it active, then that's pretty fucking sweet, but you could care less. Like,
so land just Dark Confidant. A land just Dark Confidant.
Not even Dark Confidant. You just draw a card.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, yeah.
I mean, what control deck isn't excited to hit its land drop and then get to draw another card? And, like, the bolt effect is, is, like, oh, I drew a spell, I get to draw the spell and
kill a dude or something. Yeah.
Like, I feel, I don't know if this card's going to see play while you have things like Sphinx's Reve in the format. Like, who wants to tap out for this on turn five and you can just draw five cards at the end of turn? But I think post rotation, this card I think stands to be a defining control card.
I think if blue white red makes a comeback, which I mean, you now have the blue red Scarland.
That's also
to make that, you know, a real thing. I can see this as a one of. In those decks, for sure.
Yeah, most certainly. And even things like, you know, people may want to try to play, like, Grixis or something like that. That's a pretty interesting card for that deck. A nice source of card advantage past, like, Jace. So, definitely something interesting. I like it. I think that a lot of people are kind of putting it right at the right power level. I don't think anyone's really, like, overestimating the card or anything like that. They know it's a 5 drop that doesn't do anything immediately, so... But, you know, definitely something interesting. Did we ever talk about Krufix at all?
I'm not sure if we
did. I believe we did. But...
What the hell is Krufix?
He's Nyx.
Yeah.
That's what
Nyx.
He's just like a four-armed shadow
something. Okay, so I mentioned the guitar for Athreos. Have you seen the awesome
alter? He can play two guitars.
Well, this guy has four keyboards.
Yeah. He's a keyboardist.
Krufix can play four keyboards. That's actually the best.
Just in case we haven't, it's three green, blue. So it's green, blue, god, obviously.
God claws.
And you have no maximum hand size. Oh, great. We get a reliquary tower.
Get it? Because you have four hands?
I wish it was like your hand size is now four times the regular hand size. Anyway. And then it has like a weirdly worded Omnoth clause. So any time that mana would empty from your mana pool, it turns into colorless mana. I've already seen
God of the Keys.
Yeah. So basically, it's sort of like Omnoth. If you remember that card from it was Zendikar block, it just lets you keep your mana in your pool through your phases. So this does the same thing basically, except it just turns it into colorless mana.
It's a really cool EDH card, though. I know we joked about EDH a lot, but that's a really funny EDH card. Like, No,
it's definitely like that's kind of its home, and I really feel like blue green kind of got like the shitty god. Yes.
See a lot
it's
of people
not worse than Karametra.
That's also true.
Yeah.
I would play this over Karametra.
100%.
But I would never cast either of them.
Right.
I mean,
right.
If this thing is going to see any kind of play, it would be in some kind of Bant control list with Sphinx Revelation.
Where you have access to Rev and Polychronos. Right. Yeah. Ridiculous shenanigans. But I don't know. Like, I've seen a lot of people like pushing this with, like, you could play Krufix and you could play the, what's the 2/3 that untaps? It's something
profit of
Krufix. It's like I don't want to be playing those 5 drops are awful. Like,
right?
Yeah, you need a lot of things to go right for this thing to make it.
I don't know. I mean, people are gonna people are gonna play the card. They're going to because people like mana.
It's a big effect.
Not to mention the fact that there are ways to get rid of this card. Like you could just be like, yo, let's go to combat. Oh, okay, end of your main phase. Get rid of Krufix, and you're just like, but my mana's. Oh,
well, it's even like worse.
You can actually hear the.
So like a lot of people are like, oh yeah, you just play it, and then you play the Prophet of Krufix.
Right.
You untap your lands, you flash this in a turn, then you untap, do whatever, untap all your lands, and at the end of the turn you tap all your lands. And it's like, well then I just kill your Krufix, and then you've lost all your mana, and you've just done nothing.
Your plan is to tap out consistently.
Yeah,
that's
not where you want to be.
Okay, cool. So
while you're tapped out. With like all of this colorless mana in your
pool.
Yeah,
it's like, okay, now you have colorless mana, so
with Krufix God of the Horizons goes to exile or dies or whatever he does, does the mana then empty?
So whenever you go to the next phase, it would empty.
Right.
Okay.
If you're sitting in main phase one and like you did something and I response got rid of your Krufix, then all your mana stays until you move to combat and then it's gone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
I didn't think you just had like empty mana for Evs, but
no.
I don't know.
No, once it says you no longer have that effect, it's gone.
Oh, I guess that makes sense. The card doesn't apply.
Anything else in the multicolored? I guess
the spider art's kind of neat. Like I like the art on all these.
I don't think the spider is a bad uncommon at all.
I mean, I don't think it's going to see play, but
maybe not right now. But I mean, like
see play in my cube.
But I mean, like it's something. It kind of reminds me of Griff's custom card a little bit, at least like a helper.
Except it's less drunk Griff, Harry Potter dead.
But I mean, this card might even slot into Dredge. In all honesty. When you look at it, like it is those colors. It does things that that deck wants. So yeah, it's definitely interesting.
What the girl didn't want.
And then the last one is like Underworld Coinsmith for aggressive.
This is probably the closest to like actual playable constellation cards.
Yeah,
well, even then, I don't know this card.
No, it's kind of got all the right things. It's white and black. It's a human, so it's like got the right subtype. So it plays well with Zathar Necromancer.
I mean, I'd still play like it's like number one's Cartel Aristocrat, number two Aristocrat, number two is Viscopa Guildmage, and then distant third I think is this card. So.
Sure. Yeah. I just pointed it out. It is a card. It is a thing,
and I shot it down.
Fair enough.
You're right, Morgan. This is a card that was printed in this set. I appreciate your contribution. See, I'm building them up, guys. Everybody, Morgan you did it. So, I'm too sick to do this shit. All
right, so can we finally talk about the one artifact we want to talk about?
Yes.
All right, Hall of Triumph.
Whee!
It's got three colors.
Hall of Triumph is a three-mana artifact. And I mean, there's a couple artifacts, but they're all in commons and not going to see play. But Hall of Triumph...
Outside
of Dave's Cube. I did convince him to put in the Chariot of Victory. Because
that card. What's that card? Victory!
But Hall of Triumph says, when it enters the battlefield, choose a color. And then all creatures of the chosen color that you control get +1/+1. So this reminds you a lot of adaptive...
Automaton,
right? Where you could choose a creature type, and this one just says color. When you're playing a devotion strategy anyways, it's interesting.
Yeah.
Granted, the colors that generally benefit from this already are the colors that probably have access to Spear, which is just better.
Right.
But this is interesting that it does offer some colors that don't normally get this effect, have a chance to be like, oh, wow, we get it too. Yay.
Yeah, right. I mean, like, Blue Devotion could potentially play this, and Master Waves gets even better, I guess.
I do feel like I'd be really tilted if a mono blue opponent was like, well, I got all these cards on board. I'm like, well, this isn't that bad. Hall of Triumph blue. Why? You're terrible. So this card's terrible. I hope you're all dead soon.
By the way, these are the type of people Mike actually loses to. It's the best thing ever.
Wait, when do I lose?
So that's pretty much all the cards we wanted to... Oh, wait. No, we have actually five more cards we actually want to talk about. So let's go ahead and we'll move to going to turns.
Going to turns. Turns. Choo, choo, turns. Choo, choo. Turns.
Oh, wow. Oops. Wow. Whoop, whoop. I'm glad that...
We really need a soundboard.
We could do that in theory.
Oh, we have money for that.
Yeah. Let's do all it. Right. Anyway, so...
Making contributions.
So, Jordan, you are actually going to be running.
Yeah.
Going to turns, so he's going to be the judge and the moderator. I'm going to lose, just so everyone knows already. And we have five cards. And Jordan's going to announce each of those cards. And then me, Mike, and Dave are all going to have a shot at them. And saying what they are going to do, if they're going to impact... constructed formats, or if they're just going to be duds. So Jordan, whenever you want to start.
Yeah, no, have the list of cards. The spoiler here again. Yeah, decide. T-side. Holy cow. All right. It is a white, one colorless, one white. Exile target enchantment. If the exiled card is a god card, search its controller's graveyard, hand, and library. For the same thing. So surgical extract them, essentially. And then shuffle your library. It's an instant. We're going to start with Mike. Ready, set, go. All
right, Deicide. This card is an awesome, overcosted erase. it's only going to be relevant in this block. And there's not a lot of decks that play more than a couple gods. Like, the card will see play in sideboards. It'll be fine as enchantment removal. But I don't think this is, like upsetting in any way. It's a fine card.
Oh, there we go. All right. Morgan, go.
I think this card might just be a set too late. I think if it came out more of the gods, it kind of would have been a flavor fail, but it kind of would have probably helped keep off the mono-blue menace. I think it'll be played. I think instant speed, exile target enchantment, the same cost as Rogue Existence, it'll probably see play.
Nolan?
I gotta say, I love this card. I love the artwork. I love the flavor of it. However, I don't think it's going to see much standard play. Sideboard at the most. It's competing against Revoke Existence and Banishing Light, which I think are just better cards in general than this. But sweet flavor, I guess.
I want to give a point to Mike.
No, that's fair enough. My argument was very strong.
Mike and Dave said the same thing. Mike just said it better. next whatever, card up, Dictate of Krufix. Someone want to tell me what color that is? Green?
Blue.
Blue, man. See? You guys know why I'm moderating? All right. Dictate of Krufix is a 2 blue and 1 colorless enchantment as flash. At the beginning of each player's draw step, that player draws an additional card. We'll start with Morgan.
I'm actually pretty high on this card. I honestly think that from the talk from all the pros, they're all pretty somewhat excited about this card. It is a powerful effect, and having it at instant speed means that you kind of get the card advantage rather than your opponent, which is typical of Halloween. Halloween mics. Howling Mind effects.
Speaking of throwing the game away, Dave Nolan.
Halloween mine.
These type of effects I generally don't like. I hate playing with these decks and against them, any type of Howling Mine strategy. That being said, I think it could see play in Standard in some type of Turbo Fog / Maze's End, Sphinx Revelation type build. So it's playable, but I don't like it.
Use it the whole time next time, Nolan. Mike.
This Howling Mine effect is interesting because it has Flash. So compared to other Howling Mind effects, you get the extra card first, like if you play it correctly, but you're still spending your turn 3 to do nothing, and that's one of the things I don't like about Howling Mind. There are some cards in the format and some decks like Maze's End, like Dave said, that could make this card playable, but I never want to cast it, and I don't think I care about it.
I'm going to give a point to both Dave and Mike. Dave for the personal anecdote, Mike for the actual play strategy.
But I said Halloween Mine.
Yeah, it after made you stuttering laugh. For 9 minutes.
It made you laugh.
Sure, buddy. Next card up.
Jesus, Morgan.
It's a Hallows Eve.
All Hallows Mine.
Farika, God of Affliction, has the God Clause. And as soon as I get to it, I'll tell you what it is. For a black and a green, you can exile target creature card from a graveyard, and its owner puts a 1/1 black and green snake enchantment creature token with death touch onto the field. We're going to start with Nolan here in 3, 2, 1, go.
Okay, well, first off, I'm going to start with that. It's aggressively costed. I don't think you said that. It costs a green, black, and one for 5/5. So I like this card a lot. It's if there's some type of black-green aggressive strategy, you can definitely play this. I don't think you want too many of them, probably just a one or two of. But being able to make Death Touch snakes is very relevant and very good, in my opinion. A lot of people...
Sucks. go over to Mike.
So I'm not a fan of this card at all. The main clause here is saying that you put a snake, whoever the owner of the card that you exiled is, right? So if you exile a card from your opponent's graveyard, they get the snake token, which is not something I want to actively be doing. And, like, I just, like, this effect doesn't do anything for a very long time. And, like, ooh, I got a snake. Yay!
Morgan, go ahead.
We already have an aggressively costed card that kind of interacts with the graveyard. It's called Scavenging Ooze. And I understand that that's only in format for so long. But this card won't see play as long as Scavenging Ooze is in play. It's just far better. The fact that it doesn't hit any card in the graveyard is also really impacting. So it only hits creatures, and maybe next block creatures will be relevant, but this card I don't really like very much. And, nah.
So this is a really tough one. Nobody made it. There's a snake in my boot reference. So I'm wanting to take a point away from everybody, but I tend to agree with Mike. I think this card sucks. I'm going to give a point to Mike. Sorry, Dave. Morgan just went
Morgan's
last.
Not playing.
No.
No, I actually had a really good argument. Go fuck yourself.
Actually, no. The Scavenging Ooze comment I really liked a lot because I do like that card. Mike, I'm going to rescind the point and go to Morgan. Snapping it off. Next up, Godsend.
Not God's End.
No, not God's End.
But it could be.
Yeah. I want to get the actual text. It is not a sword. Like the traditional sense. All right. Costs 2 white and a colorless. Equipped creature gets +3/+3. It's a legendary artifact equipment. And whenever equipped creature blocks or becomes blocked by one or more creatures, you may exile one of those creatures. And opponents can't cast cards with the same name as cards exiled with Godsend. We are up to Morgan now. Go ahead. Was it Mike's turn? I'll go ahead to Mike.
So I actually like this card, I think, more than anybody else here does. Not that I'm saying it's going to be like a huge, impactful card, but I do think it's pretty powerful. It makes your creature essentially unblockable. And I think if the format, like all these cards we mentioned here, they keep pushing the format more and more into creature battles, and Godsend definitely makes sure you win creature battles. So I can see this card in the sideboard. I feel like it's going to come in and make creature matchups, you know, interesting.
I'll stop it, I swear to God. Okay, there we go. All right. Oh, man, hold on, Morgan. Take a second. All right, go ahead.
I don't think this card's playable at all. I think it's flashy, and that gets a lot of people's attention, but it just is a Volshock Batagear, in my opinion. And honestly, a lot of people are saying, like, oh, this might see play in Legacy because it kills True Name Nemesis, but you would just rather play a Sword of Fire and Ice, in all honesty. But, you know, when we have cards in this format like Elspeth, I could just internally chump block it.
Nolan, go ahead.
Can't make a point.
My point was made.
All right, so... like Morgan was saying, it's basically a glorified Volshock Batagear. It doesn't give your opponent any incentive to want to block the creature, so they can just take a couple hits from it and not care about the exile effect. Swords actually punished you for not blocking the creature, so I don't think this card is playable.
So I agree with Mike and, or I'm sorry, Morgan and Dave here. Turn order kind of hurt you there, Dave. I'm going to give that point to Morgan. Same thing. You would rather just play Sophie. But Prophetic Flamespeaker. Somebody tell me what color that is. Red flames. Red. Shut up.
He's on like Rayman. Red. Red flames. Red.
Wagner's on. So many flames.
Wagner's on at seven.
There's definitely two red mana symbols in this converted mana cost. Two red.
Two red. Two
red one color.
Oh, man. What's the name of the card?
Prophetic Flamespeaker.
All right. It is two red colorless. Double strike trample. When it deals combat damage to a player, you exile the top of your library, the top card of your library, and you can play it this turn.
Top card of your opponent's library.
No, it's the top card.
Top card of your library.
Oh, is it your
I'm
library?
I'm looking at the flipping card, Mikaro.
I'm sorry.
All right, yeah. Yeah, yeah, guy. Go ahead, Morgan. It's on you in 2-1. Go.
I can't stand this card. I honestly don't think that this card is at all remotely playable. I hate people comparing it to Shadow Mage Infiltrator. That card had evasion, and you can say that like trample and double strike is evasion, but Shadow Mage Infiltrator had fear, and it can hit through creatures. I don't think this card's playable. I think it's garbage. No one wants this card. It's not better than any other 3-drop that you could really play in the format.
Nolan, go ahead.
So I'm going to disagree with Morgan. I don't think it's completely unplayable, but I think it's going to require a very specific deck. So Burn is not going to want this because it doesn't have haste. Mono Red Aggro with more creatures isn't going to want this because it's a 3-drop that's a 1/3 and is pretty slow to hit the board, to be honest. But I think something like Red Devotion might want this because it's a card advantage engine. Could take.
That sucks to suck, man. Go ahead, Mike.
I don't think this card is amazing, but I think it's more playable than Morgan says. It does have something very relevant going for it, because it says that you may play the top card of your library, meaning it's a land, you can play it. If it's a spell of your color, you get to do it. Additionally, this card does play pretty well with Blood Rush, you know, like Gorkling Rampager. Like, having Double Strike already and Trample makes it at least somewhat daunting.
Yeah, I like Dave's discussion on the decks that it'll be playable in versus the decks that it won't be. I want to give a point to Dave.
So we all got 2 points.
Yeah, so Mike and Dave.
Everybody wins!
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, at your instep ties! All
right. Do you have a tiebreaker?
Yeah, sure, I can give a tiebreaker. Hold on a second.
It's a tiebreaker.
Yes, I'm happy, clap along if you...
This is going to be...
Can we do like a random card off of Gather, and then we just discuss the playability of that?
That card in this...
Can we do that?
Yeah, here.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, we'll discuss the playability of...
No, just random card.
If a random card off of...
From any set.
Oh yeah, right. And then in this current standard, random card that we are going to discuss is Treasure Trove. It is 2 blue, 2 colorless enchantment. Okay, and then 4 2 blue and 2 colorless. Draw a card. We are going to start with Dave Nolan. Now remember, 2 blue, 2 colorless comes into play. 4 2 blue, 2 colorless. Draw a card, Dave.
So I'm going to go. All right. So this card is really sweet because it's an enchantment. So you can activate it any number of times. So like, it's very comparable to cards like Jam Day Tome, but you have to pay 4 and tap it, so you can only use it once. This one you can use multiple times. And it's an enchantment, so it's harder to kill than artifacts. So it's definitely an effect that blue wants, and you can just draw infinite cards with it.
It's well-timed.
The card that Dave compared that to, the Jamed Tome or whatever, also is unplayable because it's stupid slow, as is this blue enchantment. Azure Mage barely saw play, and that was a creature that could attack for two and eventually draw cards. This card is so slow, I hope every blue mage casts it on turn four so I can attack them with something relevant and then kick them in the nuts.
Morgan Makaro, your go.
First of all, I have to say that, you know, Nykthos is a card, right? So it generates infinite blue mana, right? We have so many... literally infinite.
Nobody interrupted your turn, sir.
So we have a bunch of, you know, obviously we have Mono Blue Devotion, that's a deck, and it plays Nykthos, so we play this card and we can activate it as much as we want, right? We have so many...
The winner of this week's Treasure Trove Showdown is not close, Morgan Makaro. obscure Nykthos reference... not close, Morgan Makaro.
What like obscure as a JM Daytove. Card has been played since beta.
He doesn't know what that is.
I know
what
that is. It was uncommon.
Yeah, no.
It's like, ooh, that and Rod of Ruin. Let's get them both.
Yeah, no. You guys are just a little salty.
My argument was meant to be trolly, by the way. I don't think this card's actually good.
No, not at all.
No, you guys are just a little.
I give an accurate answer and lose for it. Good to know.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how the tiebreaker works.
Justice is not served.
And you're 421. I was going to say Game of Thrones champion. I need to go to bed.
So obviously this has been a very long episode. You kind of got, you know, your ear talked off a little bit about a lot of things, and hopefully you had some laughs, but we do want to thank our sponsor, Empire Cards. Please check them out.
Or if you were offended, don't go there.
If you hate us, please don't send any hate mail. His opinions aren't ours at all whatsoever.
Not close.
And our opinions aren't his. So we also want to remind you guys that it is obviously pre-release weekend. So go out to Comic Town. They actually have Saturday and Sunday events that are gold events. Also, Empire Cards, if you're up north in the Ohio area, so Ohio, you know, Michigan, PA area, go there. They're going to have some amazing pre-release events as well. And we also want to, you know, thank you all for, of course, listening. Please check out atyourendstep.com. That's the quickest way to access our podcast. And also check us out at mpgcast.com as well. But again, thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week. Bye.